Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! After a couple of days of torrential downpours here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicod, Virginia, today has dawned bright and beautiful, as a Friday on the front porch should be. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, headonradionetwork.com, America's liberal voice. We call what we do here Conversation Radio. You'll find out shortly if you'll just hang around. Or you'll find out at about 6 feet two, if that's what you happen to be. It works out either way. It's Friday on the front porch. I'm in a good mood, and I'm hoping sincerely for some quick-witted banter, some great conversation this evening as we head into a weekend. A programming reminder, we will have a Dr. Bill O'Brien, Professor Keith Lilly, West Virginia American, West Virginia Prism American History Chat tomorrow live at 3 p.m. here on the Horn. It will be also visible at Prism's Ustream page. Just look for Prism West Virginia in Ustream, and you can see Dr. Bill and Keith as they go forward with their ongoing attempt to raise the general historical understanding of the origins of this country. More and more, well, I can't go to one of these without completely being blown away by the things that they bring to light in these discussions. And, of course, Dr. Bill will be returning to the Horn airwaves here in a couple of months with a program devoted exclusively to discussions of the Constitution of the United States. I can't wait. It's going to be magnificent. Anyway, I'm glad you're here, and in case you might be happening to be wandering out at some point or something, and you've got a smartphone with you, remember, this is the 21st century, and the Horn can go with you. Why, you can listen to the Horn live on Stitcher Radio, you can listen on iTunes Radio, or you can listen, well, not on your smartphone, but that's on the PC, but never mind. No, you can listen on Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio. My goodness gracious, there are all kinds of Internet radio platforms out there available on both Android and iPhone devices that make it possible for you to access the program. And, of course, free. This is listener-supported radio, without a doubt. However, it is not for-profit radio. We are not for-profit media, and you won't get a bill. The way we maintain things here is by the simple generosity of the people who listen. And when you contribute to the Horn, you are contributing from your own pocket, but you are contributing to the common good of all who wish to listen. And for that, I and all of us here at the Horn are extremely, extremely grateful. Texas Betsy, our blogger, and the Horn's official Jewish mother, says, I spend every Thursday evening in traffic, and I listened to almost an hour of your live program yesterday in said traffic. I remember a long time ago when I said that Internet radio would be the wave of the future and that the next step would be making it possible for Internet radio to be heard in people's cars. Because that's where, you know, that's where the people like that filth merchant Limbaugh and the rest of the bottom-feeding, putrid right-wing, you know, the Savages and the Hannitys and the, I don't even want to repeat their names. But that's where they get people, is when they're stuck in traffic, cruising down the road, looking for something to just sort of keep them from going phone pole dancing. And now, with the advent of technology, we're there too. We're on the field and engaged in the struggle. So thanks, Betsy. And you listen on what platform? I don't listen a lot via my smartphone. Mostly I do that when I'm monitoring Dr. Bill. And I walk out into the hall and check it out just to make sure that everything's working okay. But, there are a lot of different platforms Betsy uses TuneIn Radio. And they're all out there in the App Store or the App Market if you're on Android. It's all very, very simple. It's there, Lottie. It really is on Stitcher. I've been talking to him. If you look, I don't know if you need to look for. Head on with Bob Kincaid. Yeah, try a few. It's there, because I get notes from them saying they run both the podcast and the live stream, because among other things, our live stream was compatible with what they did. It's there. I get there. I talk with their technical people and stuff. So, yeah, it looks like, barring explosive gallbladders or any other sort of... No, that's the podcast that posts to Stitcher the next morning. The live stream is also there. But that's the... Next week should be normal, to the extent that normal is a setting on a dryer. We should just be here, which is very, very cool. I do have an appointment on Wednesday, but that I should be back in plenty of time for that. Let's go ahead and get this out of the way early on. I will be gone. I'm on the road again beginning on May the 4th. May the 4th. Definitely May 4th. May 4th through May 9th, I'm going to Boston and Charlotte. The good folks at the Rainforest Action Network are taking the mountaintop removal struggle to Bank of America, who continues to fund mountaintop removal. You know, the same Bank of America that the Sierra Club has a so-called affinity scheme with, in which Bank of America issues Sierra Club credit cards, and Sierra Club gets some of the money off the credit card purchases through Bank of America, which is a mountaintop removal funder. That Bank of America. So we're on the same page. Now, the 4th through the 9th, I am gone. And so, obviously, there will be no shows. A whole bunch of reruns, but I will try to update via my Twitter feed along the way. First, Boston. I'll be flying to Boston on the 4th and returning home on the 9th from Charlotte. So, fly to Boston, fly Boston to Charlotte, fly Charlotte to home. Just a great big, it's an exercise in geometry. It's a triangle. Ooh. Yes. I know, live in South Carolina. Going to Charlotte, you don't have to go through Boston. No, that's going to Charlotte, you have to go through Atlanta. Going to heaven or hell, you have to go through Atlanta. But no, it's because the speaking engagements are in Boston and Charlotte. So there you go. And as we get nearer, I will make sure and let you know where the places are if you want to come out. I would love to see folks if you're in the area. There will be some public events, and if you would like to come out and add your voices to those public events and physically join the struggle against mountaintop removal, it would be ever so welcome. We can always use new allies in this ongoing struggle to stop the sacrificing, the unwilling sacrificing of people who are told that are, you know, we're really Americans. It's just that we're not treated like them. So, come on out. We've got lots of friends up in the Boston and New England area. We've got folks in North Carolina and South Carolina. If you can make it to Charlotte, if you can make it to Boston, come on. I'm told we'll be staying somewhere in Boston. I'm told we'll be staying somewhere near the MIT campus. The buildings may fall down with my mathematical skills in negative numbers. I don't know. There may be some sort of little math quake or something that happens there, but I'll I'll try not to destroy anything. Now, where to start with this Friday on the front porch? I saw a story, and I've got the audio for you. It's delightful. Willard Romney has apparently taken to the campaign trail now that he doesn't have to fend off little mosquitoes. Okay, great big pudgy pasty mosquitoes in the case of Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. But he doesn't humming around his ear. Silver. Ron Paul smack.
I want to be on women. I want to be in the inside of women. I want to control their bodies. Smack.
Rick Santorum. And then there's Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. Callista Tiffany. Take Callista Tiffany. Vacation in the Greek islands. Splot. Newt's not out yet, but he's getting out. He's like when the party. It's been a really good fun party, and the party's over. But you know that one last drunk won't leave. That's Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. So Mitt, you know, president not sure. Goes out and talks to a couple of giant schools, the Ohio State University. Yes, Guy James, I learned, the Ohio State University, things like that. So naturally, because he's coattailing and chasing, Willard went to speak to the students at, and I'm not kidding, Otterbein University in Ohio? Is that a real place? Or is it like where Bullwinkle graduated from the What's the Matter You in Frostbite Falls? No, apparently it's a real school. Apparently it had some real students because they got sat down right back behind Willard Romney. At least he didn't strap them to anything, go for a ride. But he wanted to offer some friendly advice to those students there at Otterbein University. He wanted to give them the benefit of his years and his wisdom. And I don't know, maybe it's just a little pep talk. Let them know that there's something out there for them. Now, granted, Willard had a lot of help growing up. You know, he's got, 19 grandmothers or something like that. But, Willard understands. He understands we're not all like that. But sometimes, instead of being told about silly stuff like ethics or philosophy or Socrates and all of that, what is wisdom? Sometimes you just need to be reminded that we're go get it done Americans, right?
This kind of divisiveness, this attack of success, is very different than what we've seen in our country's history. We've always encouraged young people, take a shot, go for it. Take a risk. Get the education. Borrow money if you have to from your parents. Start a business. I was with a guy named Jimmy John. You know Jimmy John? Yeah, you guys know.
Apparently, Jimmy John went into the sandwich business. Jimmy Johnson, coach. I don't know who this Jimmy John is, but apparently all college students are supposed to know who he is. They chuckled a little bit. God, he's just so sadly nerdish, isn't he? But borrow money from your parents, you know, because everybody in America has rich parents. Just like Ann Romney loves it that there are some women out there who have children and still have no choice but to go back into the workplace. She loves that, she said so herself. That's almost a direct quote. Well, Willard wants you to go out, kids, and borrow money from your parents. I am not letting Ferg, Margie, and Doodle see that clip, because then they'll realize that we've been ripping them along and just not loaning them the money. Just go borrow money from your parents. Take a chance. And then I realized, wait a minute, I've heard this whole con before. I know this bit. Wait a minute.
Now, you don't want to work all your life. Take a chance. Take it while you're young. My uncle, a Blue Ascensionist, Effingham Hoofnagel, took a chance. He was 3 miles and a half up in the air. He jumped out of the basket of the balloon and took a chance of lighting on a load of hay.
Golly. Hmm. Did he make it?
No.
Oh.
He didn't. Had he been a younger man, he probably would have made it. That's the point. Don't wait too long in life.
That's the point. That's where these weirdos are. They're knocking off old W.C. Fields movies that they didn't understand were farce in the first place. Republican economic theory is taken from screwball comedies of the Depression era 1930s. Willard Romney, again.
This kind of divisiveness, this attack of success, is very different than what we've seen in our country's history. We've always encouraged young people, take a shot, go for it. Take a risk, get the education, borrow money if you have to from your parents, start a business. I was with a guy named Jimmy John. You know Jimmy John? Yeah, you guys know.
Jeebus. GOP economic theory is predicated on a flim-flam con job promise of some future wealth that is predicated on the thinnest of cons.
If 5 gets you 10, 10 will get you 20. Beautiful home in the country, upstairs and down. Beer flowing through the estate over your grandmother's paisley shawl.
Beer?
Beer! Fishing in the stream that runs under the arboreal bell. A man comes up from the bar, dumps $3,500 in your lap for every nickel invested, says to you, "A sign here on the dotted line," and then disappears in the weaving fields of alfalfa.
Gosh, do you think he was telling the truth?
You don't think a man would resort to taradiddle, do you? Mm-hmm. Why, he sounds like a child at the very thought of disposing of these shares. How does the bank make its money?
By investing.
That's the point. Now, you know what to work for you.
That's the point. And that's what we've got here. Willard Romney going to Otter Bean University and engaging in some taradiddle. Because 5 will get you 10 and 10 will get you 20. River of beer. Honest to God, I would prefer William Charles Duncan Fields running as the Republican nominee. I'd be more inclined to believe him. Instead of these pious blandishments from a man who was born with silver underwear in his mouth. Borrow money from your parents. I hope our side is not afraid to take that and run with it. Borrow money from your parents. Well, what do you do when your parents are borrowing money from the bank or going to payday lending on a biweekly basis and a couple of thousand dollars in the hole. What do you mean you can't loan me money, Mom? Willard Romney just told me to borrow money from you so I can go out and set up a sandwich shop just like Jimmy John's. But America has a history of forever having some right-wing con artist out on the hustings telling us that, well, we can all be rich. We just have to be... Yeah, but see, if you're going to be rich, you want to make sure you're being good to the rich right now, because someday you're going to be rich too, and you don't want to pay those taxes now, do you? Jeebus. Oh, okay. It's Otterbein. Thanks, Isaac. That's how they pronounce it. It's real, right up the street from me. Right up the street from you? You mean you didn't go and see Willard Romney talking about the River of Beer today, Isaac? Sorry, it's B-E-I-N. Bean. Frankenstein. Frankenstein. Yeah. Frankenstein! Blucher. That was just too... That had to be at the front end of the program, because it's too much silly for one human being to tolerate in one afternoon. I said Blucher. Where's the horse whinny in the chat room? Come on, you guys. You can't be off. I'm the one with the rotten gallbladder, okay? We can't all be off our game. Jesus Christ. Borrow money from your parents. Uncle Jed, you got any of that there, what you call walking around money in your pockets? Would you, I'm taking a wheelbarrow down to the Commerce Bank. Would you call Mr. Drysdale and see if he'll just fill it up for me? I want to go make sandwiches. That or be a streetcar conductor, because I like that little nickel squirter they get to wear. Or maybe I'm going to be a fry cook or a brain surgeon. America 2012, and it's all bad slapstick comedy. And it would be funny if these people actually didn't want to get hold of the reins of power to the extent that they don't already have them and drive this country into the dirt. Yeesh. Yeah, being warned, beware of racists in Boston by Marty. I guess all of you by now have seen this business of the... It is Friday, so we can talk about this kind of thing. This business of the response of Bruins fans to having been beaten in overtime. Sandra alerted me to this yesterday, and it was mind-boggling. So effing mad. These are all tweets about the Bruins losing to the Capitals in the seventh game in overtime. That effing N-word scored. Why the F are you showing replays of that N-word scoring? We lost to a hockey-playing N-word. What kind of shit is this? The N-word scores again, we riot. Seriously, effing N-word. Joel Ward, your Y-O-U-R, a N-word. Can't believe Boston just let a sand N-word beat them. I can't believe the series winner was scored by a effing N-word. Of course, the only... Effing N-word on Washington scores. Joel Ward is a effing N-word. A N-word beat us in OT? Are you kidding me? Stupid N-word, go play basketball. Hockey is a white sport. Effing stupid, arrogant, smelly, useless, waste of life, sad excuse for an NHL hockey playing N-word. Joel Ward is the first N-word to score in Game 7 overtime. And then finally, of course, it's the effing N-word, white power. Oh, okay, I understand now, Isaac. Isaac didn't go see Willard at Otterbein University because his magic underwear is out being rust-proofed at the Midas shop. Oh, God, it is. It's Friday on the front porch. And let's light up the phones and have some good conversation. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. If you want to do the direct dial thing so that we're not paying the toll-free freight, 304-658-3333 is the number. And, of course, you can reach the show by email, bobkincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And if you'd like to contribute and help keep the lights on, literally here, PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. That pretty much covers it, I think, except to say that you are also welcome in the chat room. The chat room being free, and headonradionetwork.com chat room being the location. Having said all these things several times, you know, this is the Head On Radio Network. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Global Genius, it's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second, it's totally my mother's soap.
Global Genius, it's not your father's soap.
No, see, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap, there's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that. Try it again.
Global Genius, we got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com. 28 and a half minutes before the hour, I thought we would get an early start instead of, I've had my fair share of filibobsters in the last couple of days, so I thought we would, I'd try not to just monopolize the conversation this last night of what has been a short week. So at least that's the thinking. Just by way of follow-up, Joel Ward, who did do in the Bruins to their, well, as Ron and Raleigh notes, obviously the hockey fans in Boston haven't gotten the post-racial America memo just yet. How about, says Ron, how about this effing N-word laughing all the way to the bank? And with a little bit of background, and this, see, moments like that are a reminder that racism isn't so, oh, you mean, what, I didn't know Boston was in Alabama. Well, it's not. You see, Joel Ward had spent career time in Nashville, you know, Tennessee, playing for the Predators, and said publicly that he really enjoyed his time playing in Nashville and actually hated to leave it. But the fact of the matter was the Caps, the Washington Capitals, had some room in their salary cap, and therefore he took the opportunity, seeing as he was toward the end of his skating career. Thanks for the background, David. That speaks volumes, doesn't it? Happy in Nashville, doing okay in D.C., and then those clowns. So there's that. Oh, by the way, a reminder in from Shorty. What did you miss? Willard Romney as W.C. Fields. That's about it. And she asked me to remind folks about jokes4miles.com. I looked at this last night, and it's really, really worthwhile. You know, we've all of us got a joke or two that are our favorites. And in this case, preferably clean ones. Myself, I went to my go-to quickie, the one about two cannibals eating a clown. You know that one. Two cannibals are eating a clown. One looks at the other one and says, "This tastes funny to you?" And what you do, Miles is a 19-year-old man who is in, young man who is in his fourth round of treatment for brain cancer. And he will be in isolation at a hospital in L.A., I believe. For months on end. And with that in mind, his dad came up with the idea of asking people to record, you know, using your smartphone video or whatever, jokes. Just a quickie, 30 seconds or less. And the goal is to get 5,000 jokes for young Miles. And you can read all about it at jokes4miles.com. J-O-K-E-S, the numeral 4, Miles, M-I-L-E-S.com. They want something to, Miles' dad wants something to make his son laugh. He's not asking for anybody to pay for the treatment or anything like that. He just wants to make his son smile. And so, yeah, I uploaded a joke last night. Because I love the cannibal clown joke. I just think it's something approaching comedy perfection, but I'm silly that way. Jokesformiles.com. As Shorty notes, the more jokes, the better. Laughter really does matter. She adds, how do you clean holy water? You boil the hell out of it. Ah, she'll be here all week. Try the veal. About 24 minutes before the hour, and let us begin the conversation of this Friday on the front porch. Hey, welcome to the program.
Rendition the gallbladder. Rendition the gallbladder.
Yeah, we're going to waterboard my gallbladder, David.
Yeah, that's what needs to happen. So how much time do you have to collect the funds? Is the doctor telling you, or?
We don't know that yet. The way the schedule's shaking out and everything, I'm guessing mid-June.
Wow. And we're guessing skyrocket costs here.
Well, yeah, between this ER visit and the surgery itself, if it comes in at less than $10,000, it will be something approaching a miracle.
Well, you know, Bob, I'm gonna have to give some advice on this. I think you get some people on the horn and your family together, and we need to start a Kickstarter page. And I'm sure we can raise that money in no time.
I need to do more research on that.
Do what is necessary. That's what I say.
Yeah, Kickstarter.
I think it's doable though, Bob. No, I wouldn't stress too much about it. It's not like you owe $500,000 from the Russian mafia or something.
No,
look on the bright side.
Although maybe I could borrow the 10 from them.
Maybe you could. So how are we doing on funding this week?
Not real great.
Let's get up right now.
We had a very kind contribution. Five slots in the Thrifty 250 earlier this afternoon. I'll say that. And we've had a couple of others in the last couple of days, but not many.
I believe the two winners from last week, they got their contribution gifts by now.
Yes, I think. I know one of them did because I got a real woohoo email.
Great. I'm glad to hear that. So let's see. I'm just doing this at the spur of the moment. So if you're listening, you might be happy what you're going to get if you contribute right now.
Ooh!
If you contribute $20.
Now wait. Okay. I know we got to kind of work. We probably should work through this off air, but we'll do this on air.
Okay.
I think we need to refine the process just a little bit. I got to thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
What we do is nobody sends any money at first.
Okay.
Whatever this offer is, and knowing you, it will be creative and it will be cool.
Right.
If you want it, send an email first saying, me,
okay.
I want it. And then once we have guaranteed that you're first in line, then I'll write back and say, yeah, it's you, and then we can finish the process. Does that make sense, David?
That makes perfect sense. I think that's the way to do it. So, this contribution gift is not going to be food related. It was thought at the last minute, and hopefully someone will jump in for this. Whatever the amount's going to be, like you said, this will be something that some people may want. The blue collar comedy tour? No, I'm just kidding.
We were about to have a problem.
Yeah. Let's do this. There's an acclaimed show on HBO that a lot of people are talking about. It's the Game of Thrones.
Ooh.
Season 1 DVD has just come out. So the first person who gets in on the contribution, me, You get the DVD.
Of season one of Game of Thrones.
Season one of Game of Thrones, correct. And that's a lot of time you can invest in with the commentaries and the episodes. So if you don't have HBO, this is a good way for you to catch up.
And, you know, I'm one of those people who doesn't have HBO. This is not me. This is not me pitching in. So I want it. I'll do it.
Yeah.
No. But everybody and their cousin is writing about Game of Thrones.
I think Game of Thrones, and this is something that I think a lot of people who are into politics, they can appreciate this as well. Because what it does is it's a show that gives the correct balance of relationships between realms, emotional and psychological and physical and otherwise. And it's also very interesting because there is a tint of the magic sword and fantasy to it, but it's on the tail end of magic dying out in the kingdoms. So that's what makes it really interesting from that standpoint, because usually shows come when they do fantasy, they load it up with all the magic that you can think of. And this one's just saying, no, magic is dwindling and it's about to be gone.
I didn't know there was any of that in there. I thought it was just sort of the made up the royalty battling sort of.
No.
I imagined that HBO came up with it on the heels of the success of its pseudo historical series on. Was it HBO that did Henry VIII?
Yeah, I think the reason why HBO came up with this is that's part of the reason, but also because of the books were such a good success with the novel series that they started like in 1990 or something. The author that was responsible for this, so they have a lot of material to mine through, as it were. So, whoever wants the Game of Thrones season one. Hit the email with the me.
Yeah, just hit the button. Hit the button and say me.
And that will close out the contributions for this month. That's all.
Yeah, you were talking. Yeah, you were talking about how are we doing. Well, this is the 27th of April.
Right.
The 28th and the 29th will be Saturday and Sunday. 30th will close out the month. And so that tonight and Monday are the last nights for any fundraising, and we are $685 away from the monthly goal. So that's where we stand.
Well, if anyone else is listening and they're interested in this, don't kick yourself too hard, because I plan on doing this every month, and I won't stop until I have no money. I think a lot of people deserve something, and that's what I think should happen. And usually a lot of the stuff that we talk about, what will happen is eventually that will be distributed as well. So everything that you guys have heard me talk about, that's going to be probably given away for free eventually.
Wow.
And the other thing I was thinking of, Bob, was that I'm going to give people the heads up like 2 weeks in or something. I'll give you the date, which I plan to reveal what the contribution gift is, so people can write the date down who are listening to podcasts, because I know that's probably a lot of people are kicking themselves like, oh, I should have been listening live or something.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people who just can't.
Yeah, I know. And I don't know, we'll have to work through that as well, but I want everybody to get an opportunity to get something that's it's interesting, it's inspiring, and, you know, just something that you never thought you would get. And also, this is for a lot of people who have never won anything as well, so you can't say you've never won anything.
Yep.
And I think that's important as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I mean, on the subject of politics today and Romney and all that we have going on, so far in this election, how do you feel about the coverage?
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's horse race coverage, and of course, much more time has been spent overall on the little weirdos posturing for the Republican presidential nomination when it was a done deal all along. I mean, that's the one thing we tend to forget. And I'm as guilty as the next guy, David. I got a sort of perverse pleasure out of watching the weirdos because, you know, who doesn't enjoy going to the circus and watching the clowns put pies in each other's faces and shoot each other, squirt each other with the seltzer bottle and climb out of the little car? You know, it's that act hasn't changed much over the last 100 years.
I mean, there's only so many times.
I mean, before the automobile came along, clowns were climbing out of little tiny stagecoaches, okay? It's a clown act, and it makes people laugh, and you look at it, and everything. But it's a clown act. But there was never any doubt that the nominee was going to be Willard Romney. And, you know, we were distracted by it, and it disturbs me because one of the real horror shows that has not been focused on is the possibility of losing the Senate. And yes, I know, I don't need the emails about how all, you know, so many Democrats are bad. It's absolutely true. But the fact of the matter is, anyone who says that a Democrat is as bad as a Republican as a statement of general principle is not living in reality world.
Yeah,
some are as bad. Some for their perfidy are worse. Take for instance my senator, Blanche Manchin. He's worse than a Republican because he portends to be a Democrat.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And the other thing I would say is that there's really no, to me, there isn't at all having physical pain voting for a Democrat. I mean, I disagree with a lot of what's going on, but when it comes to something that we are in a crisis as a nation. And we are in a crisis as a nation. And there's so many different factions coming up in different directions at us. It only makes sense to stay with what we have.
Well, things are not, and that's what I keep saying. Things are not going to get better,
right,
under President Romney.
Right, right.
I mean, is there anybody that thinks that they are? And, you know, there's only going to be two people on the ballot. I mean, yeah, there might be 19 other people down there. None of them, they're vanity candidates, okay?
Right.
If I wanted to, I could sit down this weekend and write a book and publish it on Amazon as a vanity title. And it's called a vanity title because it serves no other purpose than stroking my own ego, assuaging my own vanity. And, you know, if you spend any time at all with the PRISM West Virginia American History series, you know, you'll hear a lot of talk about how this form of government came into being. And there was an idea that, you know, it was not always cast in stone that there would be a bicameral legislature. You know, that there would be, you know, one legislature would make the decisions and done. But this whole thing was devised as a means of making sure that things, and it sounds counterintuitive, and sometimes it works to our profound ill effect, but the government was designed to not work. It was designed to make it difficult to do things.
Mm-hmm.
So that a House of Representatives, which at the time of the framing of the Constitution and the adoption of the Constitution, was the only popularly directly elected body, you know, the Electoral College selected the president, the governor and state legislature selected the senators. Everything was set up so that each body would prove a check and a balance, sorry, had to say that, to the others, and that nobody could actually get their hands on power unless all three bodies were in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that is the risk that we face. The risk that we face is a lunatic House, which has already proven itself to be lunatic from its inception in January 2011 to the present. I mean, they're nuts. John Boner, Eric Cantor, Phil Gingrey, all of them mush-mouth goobers, they are crazy. They can't get their minds off women's insides.
Right.
They're fascinated with them. And so you've got that bunch, and they're a lost cause. The Senate is dysfunctional. When we had when we theoretically had both houses of Congress, the Senate was so dysfunctional it couldn't, for instance, pass the cap and trade bill. And I use that as an example, not as some example, not as an offering of what good legislation that they didn't. It just they couldn't even pass that, even though it was full of sweetheart deals for the toxic hydrocarbon industry, for instance. Okay.
Right.
So the Senate stymied that. Well, that was when the Democrats had both houses and the presidency, and that's how Democrats work. If they're not being beaten up, they're beating up themselves. On the other hand, imagine a lunatic House and a lunatic Senate with a piously dull, blandishment, babbling, religious maniac like Mitt Romney in the executive seat. The House passes the Crazy Act. The Crazy Act goes to the Senate. The Senate says, oh, look, it's the Crazy Act. We'll pass the Crazy Act, too. And so, having passed it, it goes to the President. And the President, since he's with the crazies, signs it into law, and the Crazy Act is right there. I mean, a good example, for instance, is this present, what is it, CISPA?
Oh, yeah, the CISPA. I was going to talk about that, yeah.
Now, I know a lot of people say, well, yeah, that's what he says. Obama has said he will veto CISPA. Mm-hmm. It's toxic. It's terrible. It's god-awful. It's got Big Brother. The only reason they're calling it CISPA is because they didn't want to call it Big Brother. Because it is. You know, oh, well, you know, we can only use the data for cybersecurity purposes. Well, what's cybersecurity? Anything we want it to be.
Right.
If a CISPA blows through, and understand this was passed by the House, you know, the lunatics who want to get government off your back, right? Unless they're the government that wants to be in your bedroom. I mean, Jesus, this thing contains provisions where the government can go and see what you've been reading down to the library. Or what books you've been buying on Amazon. And the small government Republicans, they're the ones that want this. Small government,
That's as big as it comes.
It doesn't get any bigger. And so, that thing, imagine Willard sitting up there, oh, for cybersecurity. Well, maybe the kids, let me go back to Otterbein University and tell them that we're doing this for their own good. Because if we don't have cybersecurity, they can't all go out and borrow money from their mothers and fathers and do like Jimmy John's. Have you ever had one of those sandwiches? Because I haven't.
I've not had one of those. I can't say I have. I think that's a regional thing because I've been completely oblivious to it.
I've seen it in a lot of different places, and their major selling point, I saw a sign for them in D.C. Last week or week before last, and they were talking, you know, their selling point is that they are fast.
Mm.
Well, if I want fast, I'll go to McDonald's.
Right.
You know, if I want fast, I can just go in and get a candy bar. Because I'm sure that no matter how fast they are, they ain't cheap.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is entrepreneurial food. But the whole point is, you know, Republicans will not be like Democrats. Republicans with the House, Republicans with the Senate, and Republicans with the presidency will ramrod stuff through, Medicare Part D, for instance. They broke the rules to pass that thing. They went and actually bribed people on the floor of the House to get that through. They kept the voting open to get that thing through when the voting was supposed to close. Oh dear, this is upsetting, sort of. Dr. John, says that Jimmy John's is crazy good, actually. Okay, Dr. John, you've got a lot of credibility out of here. So
I'm going to take your word for it. The reason why I bring up Romney...
Not that I'm going to be eating any sandwiches anytime soon. I'm the broth guy.
How long do you have to have the broth?
As long as my gut doesn't hurt.
Oh, my God. Well, the reason why I brought up Romney...
Oh, okay. Well, see, here's the other side. Kim just wrote in and said, Jimmy John's, yuck, not worth it. Just go to Five Guys and finish off your gallbladder.
We're having a dispute on a sandwich, huh? The reason why I brought up Romney was because of this comment by a respected Democrat. I'd rather have a Democrat, but I would be comfortable. I think Romney has shown in the past, in his previous years, as a moderate or progressive, that he was fairly competent as a governor and also running the Olympics, as you know. He's a good, solid family man and so forth. He's gone to the extreme right-wing positions on some very important issues in order to get the nomination. What he'll do in the general election, what he'll do as president, I think is different. Who said that, Bob?
Joe Manchin?
Jimmy Carter said that.
Oh, no.
And this
oh,
is
Jimmy,
what I'm talking
no, no!
Is that one of those things where he's like, because he's put himself up as a respectable man of faith, that people just jump right to him and say he's got to be good?
No, I think that's you know, Jimmy Carter is a Jedi of deep understanding. The Force is strong with him,
mm-hmm.
And I think he's just sort of letting some Jimmy Carter out there, because, you know, the weirdos on Fox and stuff, like, do you hear that? Jimmy Carter said he'd be okay as a president. Well, that just goes to show. And so the Republicans will hate him just a little bit more.
Hmm. It'll be interesting to see.
Third opinion on Jimmy John's, which appears to be the salient conversation of the night, dude.
All right.
I actually find Jimmy John's kind of mediocre. This from Corey in the Free State of Louisville. They don't really impress me that much, especially compared to Subway, and I don't find Subway that remarkable either. Okay, this is where I'll put my endorsement in. I got two chains that I like. Steak Escape is good, and Penn Station is good. I like those two. I like Penn Station's Italian. Yeah, this is what... Gallbladders.
Well, I didn't mean to turn this into...
They're classic Italian. I add artichoke hearts, and it's superior.
Well, since this is open, I have to throw this out there. Does anyone know what how Dickie's Barbecue tastes like? Because they opened up a chain here.
Dickie's Barbecue is in Maine?
Yeah.
You know what? Somebody will tell you. That'll happen sometime during the program.
Have you had it before?
No.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't.
See, I won't go to... Generally speaking, I don't go to chain barbecue joints.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I mean,
because barbecue joints are supposed to be made by people who are religiously devoted to the concept of barbecue. And barbecue is an incredibly, intensely personal thing. And so I can't see how it translates.
Yeah.
But maybe. But I guess it's not, you know, Maine is not South Carolina, and there isn't, you know, somebody Joe Bubba's barbecue stand on every corner. I mean, the little town I grew up in had five or six barbecue joints, and the people who went to each one were devoted to the point of militancy about them. And I guess, you know, you don't have that up there, so a chain can come in and people go, well, damn, that's barbecue.
Yeah.
I mean, they won't do it. Wow, by George, that's barbecue. My main accent's not so good.
The reason why I bring it up is because I live right by it, so when you go by it over and over and over again, you just get curious and you say, I wonder what this tastes like.
Well, if you live right by it, if you open your window, do you smell hickory?
No, not quite like that, but...
Well, no. A good barbecue joint should absolutely perfume the neighborhood. You should be able to find a good barbecue joint just by following the wood smoke.
Well, I think the problem with that is because there's so many competitive diners and restaurants and food places that stuff like that cancels out. So yeah, I'd be interested to hearing what the Diggy's barbecue is like.
Okay, I will. I'll look it up myself. I'm curious. I'm not familiar with these folks.
I believe they started their chain in Texas. Not a surprise.
Well, Texas barbecue is far different from North Carolina barbecue. Is far different from Alabama barbecue.
Right. I understand that.
If it's something that originated in Texas, I wouldn't be surprised to see that they offer thinly sliced brisket. And you can't go wrong with that. That's meat candy. It's yummy.
I'll have to look into that.
And you would also become familiar with some vocabulary terms, one of which is burnt ends.
Burnt ends.
Yeah, burnt ends. They're very special.
And the other thing I was going to say was regarding, I'm sure you've heard of this, or maybe you haven't, the story regarding Tim Tebow and the $1 million offer.
Do what? What did I miss?
Apparently, the adult website, Ashley Madison,
yes,
is offering $1 million in your best Dr. Evil voice for proof that someone has taken Tim Tebow's virginity.
Oh, man. Is that where this culture is? Really?
I think that's where that culture is. But, you know, it's interesting.
Ashley Madison has put a price. How can you tell? I was about to be sexist and say, how can you tell? Because he's a guy.
Right.
But, you know, you can't even necessarily, this is not the 11th century where the women come in and perform the hymen test the night before the marriage. That's just bullshit.
Either a woman or a man is probably going to entrap him with some iPhone footage or something.
He'll have to say, you know, this is my first time. Or, I don't know what, weeping after it's over, begging Jesus for forgiveness. How do you know? I mean, my personal take on it is that based on public appearances and pedicures in West Hollywood, that Timmy's virginity has been gone for a long, long time.
I think it, you know, it's Ashley Madison's gimmick, and I would just suggest this to Tebow, to put a hand on top of his drink so he gets no Mickey's slipped in.
No roofies.
No roofies for Timmy.
Of course, I don't know. Can you taste a roofie in milk?
I don't know. I can't say. I've ever experimented in that area of the pharmacy where that concerns.
I don't even want to go where this wants to take me, so we're not going to, David.
I know, but it is $1 million. I mean, I
$1 million.
I expect a lot of fake pranks and just like hoaxes to come down the pike when you offer like $1 million.
Well, it's probably couched in terms of definitive proof. Well, there ain't none.
Well, if you want, I mean, that's the other thing.
I mean, it's sad. It's 2012, and the people who ought to be doing this, you know, Larry Flint at Hustler,
right,
has been supplanted by AshleyMadison.com. It's just sad. It's sad. It's like seeing Ford overtaken by Toyota. There's something sad about it. It just is.
And the other thing I wanted to mention,
or GM overtaken by Toyota.
The other thing I wanted to mention, I just heard about this too, was regarding, did you hear about this thing with Woody Harrelson and Reddit?
No.
Well, apparently they had one of those Ask Me Anything sessions,
mm-hmm.
And Woody Harrelson thought he could just go on there and promote his movie. He didn't understand the concept of Ask Me Anything.
Oh, Woodman.
I know, and this random person says, just pops up out of nowhere, and asks the strangest, left-field question and says, is it true, one of my friends says you went to their high school proms and you took a girl's virginity at that high school prom? Is that true? And other than saying that's a total lie, a fabrication...
He said it depends on what the high school and who the virgin was?
So he kind of dodged the question. And then what was funny about it was the fact that all of these people on Reddit, because they're so, they're so adamant about getting the answers to the questions, they says, no, I don't think that was the answer. This is an Ask Me Anything session. You can't just jump back to your movie. So eventually what happened was, he bailed during the session and he didn't want to, talk about it or go any further. The way he answered it.
And the publicist got fired who came up with the idea. What were you thinking?
So, I mean, that to me is another side of, like, where we're going with the Internet and the sensationalism and how we cover stories and just all of that. And it just makes me wonder how much this year is social media going to play into the downfall of a presidency?
Well, let's hope it's not the downfall of a presidency.
Oh, no, no, or the downfall of a could-be presidency, let's just say that. Or it could be whoever the winner is.
I think those social media downfalls, if we're going to call them that, I think they happen when people go into them not understanding what social media are. Like
right.
when a publicist from some movie company says, hey, Woody, I got a great idea. I got you a gig lined up with Reddit. You're going in on an Ask Me Anything session, okay? Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because actors, you know, the publicity people are out front. They're going around. They're getting you, you know, you go talk to the movie. You know, you sit on this. Jay Leno makes a couple of dumb jokes. They're about 90 million years old. And then you talk about your movie and you roll the clip, okay? Do we need any setup on this? No, I think it speaks for itself, Jay. And that's what that is. But with social media out there, the publicists and stuff haven't quite understood. They don't understand who's doing it. They don't understand that this is, God, I hate to even use the phrase given who made it famous, but that inside social media there is a profound urge toward the gotcha.
Right.
And of course, that's a so-called gotcha question. I mean, but you know, did you take a girl's virginity at a high school prom? That's so vague as to be silly. That's like, when did you stop beating your wife? There's no answer to it.
Right. I mean, I think it was regarding a movie he was promoting a few years back. I mean, this was obviously when he was the point of the controversy was he was a Hollywood actor, big shot then, and.
Yeah, E. Kofer in the chat room noting Reddit equals Troll Central.
Yeah, you could definitely say that. Yeah,
and there's a certain benefit to that because you like to have the trolls all gathered in one place because then they don't go off trolling around in places where intelligent people are trying to have conversations. But it's still very difficult because remember the right wing pays people to go and do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I understand completely. You would think with the gas prices being down or starting to go down.
Oh, they're down to $3.85.9 here. I tell you, we're just pouring it out of the ground.
Well, I mean, the they say the trend it's the gas prices are going down. You would think that while that's happening, you would clamp down on the rhetoric on Iran. At least on the Democratic side.
Well, what I found interesting was that Ehud Barak's underling in Israel said publicly the other day, you know, I really don't think they're going to develop a bomb. And, of course, that was just terrible, terrible, terrible for the bloodthirsty warmongers over there. So Ehud Barak had to come out yesterday or today or whenever. They certainly don't appear to be giving up on their nuclear program. Well, you can have a nuclear program without going after a bomb, Ehud. Buddy, just saying.
Right, and the other thing I wanted to mention about that was there's a actual website. I saw some of the ads on Chris Hayes, and I just thought you would be interested in it. It's called IranLovesIsrael.org, I think. And what's really interesting about this campaign is it shows a lot of Iranians talking about that they mean no harm, they mean no ill will, and talking about their desire to be, you know, their desire to be friends,
left alone to live in peace.
Yeah, to be in peace. But I mean, what makes it really interesting is the fact that these are really they're not actors. They're genuine in their sincerity of this. And if people want to check it out, I think it's called IranLovesIsrael.org or something like that. And I guess they have anyone can upload a, or I don't know what the submission process is for Iran, but I think it gives like a window to show people like we don't hate your country. You're hearing a lot of propaganda, and here's what we really just think about the situation from my personal view, and this is why I think this would be bad, and so forth.
Well, I'm gonna go and check that out. I find that interesting.
Yeah, I found it interesting too.
Rather, you know, rather than saber rattling and talk about it and talking about, you know, our guns are bigger than your guns, it, you know, the whole thing that surrounds the Iran so-called debate is the faulty assumption on the front end that, ooh, those people are crazy. They just want to shoot nuclear missiles everywhere. They just want to bomb the world. Because
right.
They're crazy.
And the thing
meanwhile,
about it,
Israel's the one that has 200 weapons that it won't admit it has. Now, who's crazy? Who's paranoid?
That's what I'm saying. I mean, when I was watching on Chris Hayes, they were talking about the Iran situation, and they had one of the scholars from Iran, and then they had Eli White from Newsweek and Atlantic. And Eli White, he's a bit of like a sociopath when it comes to anything with foreign militaries and nations. And he couldn't handle the fact that when they were talking about the IAEA and the reports on the nuclear capabilities and all of that, and how there was no proof for a nuclear weapon, that there's this almost this fixation, this obsession that just immediately comes from this type of from these types of pundits who are so entrenched in it that they can't see it any other way. Like they're trying to point out to them, they're like, you know, Iran is not an evil country. That they've set themselves up in their minds so much that it's almost like it's like autopilot. Just talk about Iran and the situation of Iran being a threat, and then when you look at like a country like Iran, and you look at the nation, you look at the people, and you think, okay, so how much are we really talking about that this is the biggest enemy the world has ever faced? And it's such propaganda, it's such marketing. But you know, it goes back to what I was saying, how that's important, how you know how social media and videos and interactions like that. That's the right road to be on, rather than just be silent in this day and age. Now that we have this social media bridge connecting us all, I think Israel needs to hear more of that, rather than this constant saturation of news media headlines, these sensationalist headlines that are constantly going on. And I think it's way overdue, and it may not have an effect in the beginning. But I think over time, you know, like drops of water, eventually it's going to change a big perception. A lot of people are going to say, why are we really scared about this? And why am I really even paying attention to this headline? It's obviously that the Iranians just want to live in peace just like us.
And then the next question gets asked, but who then wants the war? And
right.
Whenever you start asking a question like that, David, you have to ask that ancient Latin question, cui bono, to whom the good? Who benefits? Who's going to make a bundle? Where are the shareholders General Amalgamated Brown People bombing?
That's good question. I mean, and it always goes back to that someone always benefits from the war.
Yeah, because war is good business. There's always somebody out there who believes that. Hey, David, I got to roll along, but great conversation, and I'll send you an address.
All right, Bob. Later.
All right, thanks for the offer. I appreciate it.
All right, no problem. Later.
Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine, and we will continue the conversation momentarily. Dr. John says his fond memories of Jimmy John's may actually, let's see, what's the exact phrase? Perhaps it's partly good if hazy college memories coloring my taste, but Jimmy John's is a simple and good sandwich like I'd make at home with tasty bread. But that's in my own opinion. He says, what's up with the nasty right-wingers? I'm late arriving tonight. Oh, well, if you run over to Think Progress, Dr. John, and you look at the clip of Willard Romney addressing the students assembled at Otterbein University, telling them that they need to go borrow money from their parents. And then you go watch clips from W.C. Fields' The Bank Dick. Go to YouTube and look for the W.C. Fields' Beefsteak Mine. It's the same speech. Take a chance. Take it while you're young. Thanks for all the kind wishes coming in for attempts to get through this surgical thing. I'll find out more on Wednesday. It's much appreciated. Let's continue onward. It's Friday on the front porch. Hey, welcome.
Hey, Bob.
Well, Tracy, long time no talk to you. You must have gotten conjured the other night because we had an email saying, hey, we haven't heard from Tracy in a while. Hope she's okay.
Well, okay, let's start with the good news first. I saw Van Jones yesterday.
Really?
Yes, he was I got an email yesterday from Reveal the Dream, and he was going to be in Pasadena and doing it through KPFK, of course. And he, in a word, amazing.
Oh, he is absolutely inspiring and amazing.
Just inspiring and amazing and kind of sexy in a nerdy kind of way.
I'll leave that to you.
I digress. But listening to him, because I've heard him speak before. He was over at the Hammer Museum a few months back, when all this Occupy LA stuff was going on, right before they got evicted. But this, and that was free, but this one you had to pay a whole $12. Oh my God. And it was a very intimate setting, but listening to him, it gives me hope. Because, you know, I'm not all that, you know, he talked about the president and how he's like, okay, you know, he was awesome and everything, but we blew it in 2010, you know, because he didn't do everything we wanted him to do, because we did not hold his feet to the fire, you know. And then we got the Tea Party, and now look what we got. And he talked, what else? Oh, he talked about race relations. Because actually, I brought it up because you know me.
No, you didn't like stand up and start talking or something, did you?
You don't. Come on.
No.
You know I did.
Well, I know.
But I was good.
I know you were.
I was good. I was intelligent. I didn't get all ghetto and shit like that, no. I used my college-educated voice. And basically, you know, I asked about, you know, the state of this country. I said, I've noticed, and I don't know. Because you know me, I said, I stood up and said, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I'm black and I'm a woman. And there seems to be a war against my kind, a war against women, and a war against people of color. And for some crazy reason, people seem to think that just because you have a black president, that racism has gone bye-bye. And I said, I've noticed that since our president's been elected, people just, I just say, their motherfucking mind, because that's what I really wanted to say. But they've lost their ever-loving mind, and I've noticed this crazy rise in racism. I just want to make sure it's not just me, and I'm just not, you know, I'm all really sensitive.
No, I don't think you are.
And he said, no, you're not, you know. And he's like, you know, we had, and he brought up President Obama with the whole Reverend Wright thing and how he answered to that. And then he brought up when Louis C. Gates was arrested in his own home and how the president responded by saying the police acted foolish. And with that, we had the president of the United States having to sit down with some racist cops having a beer summit, basically a...
Yeah, who was that?
Who was that? And then it was like the memo was, except for a couple of black leaders, Travis Smiley, who I met, by the way. Yes, I met Mr. Travis Smiley. Yes, I was at one of my restaurants eating stuff that I'm not supposed to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard a voice, and I'm like, my God, that sounds like Travis Smiley. And sure enough, it was Mr. Tyler Smiley, and I went over, because normally I don't bother celebrities because...
Well, I mean, you live there, so, yeah.
And I typically, you know, there's certain people that I gush over. Like when I met Alfre Woodard, and I made a complete kind of an ass of myself, but it was Alfre Woodard. You know, what was I supposed to do? I love me so Alfre Woodard. But I walked over to Mr. Smiley, and I told him I appreciate him and Dr. West's work, and I said I particularly like the conversation that you had with Viola Davis, who I also met, and I'm name-dropping, aren't I? Okay, Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer about the health, and, you know, feelings about how, you know, we're tired of how black people are portrayed in, you know, in movies, blah, 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 blah. And that's a really great interview. If I find it, I'll email it to you so you can see it.
Cool.
But, you know, it was really good. So, aside from that, so, Mr. Van Jones was talking about there was only a couple of black leaders that actually said, what are you talking about? He has to, you know, apologize for what he said. And then the rest of the black leader, you know, whatever leadership kind of got the memo. We're not supposed to talk about race anymore. Until this poor young man, Trayvon, this young man that was murdered in Florida.
Yeah, Trayvon Martin.
Trayvon Martin. He's like, finally, you know, it took, you know, when the president finally actually said something about race, he's like, if I had a son, he would look just like Trayvon. And he would. So, so basically, Van Jones' point was that the silence on the the non-discourse on racism in this country is about to end. Because...
Well, and see, that was such a tepid, I mean, mild thing for Obama to say, because it was a statement of absolute truth. What was he supposed to say? If I had a son, he'd look like Justin Bieber?
It was tepid. And what he should have been, you know, because I try to, you know, I get all, I equate President Obama with Sidney Poitier. I call them the noble Negroes, and so Sidney Poitier slept a white man. And,
in the heat of the night?
In the heat of the night. I asked my mom, you know, who was probably a teenager or so, when that movie came out, not much longer before she had me, actually. And LA was very segregated. And, she didn't go west of Crenshaw, and so she was damn near in her 20s. Okay? But, so she's at this movie theater on, and anybody in LA knows, those movie theaters aren't here, there anymore, but on Maine and, Broadway and Manchester. And when that was Sidney Poitier, the crap out of that white man, what do they call you?
They call me Mr.
She said there was an uproar in the theater like none you have ever seen. You know, when they showed that movie in the South, they cut that scene out completely.
Yes, yes. There's some things that just aren't done.
You can't go have some Negro go slapping some white man on the
No, corner. No, no.
Oh, no, we can't have, right? No, 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 no. So, yeah, I had and on top of the fact that I got to speak to Mr. Van Jones, yes, I have a sign, and I have an autographed copy of his new book, We Build a Dream, which I am reading, and it is like I can't put it down.
He is a truly brilliant man.
Brilliant and funny.
And every time I think of how intelligent he is, I get sort of sick at my already sick gut thinking about how he got thrown under the bus over something said by a little piece of walking human excrement named Glenn Beck.
See, you know, this is one of those things that he don't pull any punches on the president in the book. I haven't gotten to the section yet. And he's got, you know, because he was so funny, you know, he's like, I'm not going to talk about what's in the book because I need you to buy the book. So I will talk about, they're like, Mr. Jones, is this a pro-Obama or a pro or an anti-Obama book because of what happened while he, you know, in the 8 months that he was in the administration. He's like, no, it's a pro analysis book. It's a book.
Oh, it's a pro brains book, a pro thinking book.
Yes, yes, yes. You know, and
I gotta tell you, Tracy, just because it's out there in the chat room. Our good friend Benedict just said there's some serious man crush going on here.
Say again?
There's some serious man crush going on here.
Man crush? Is that what you
said? Yeah, I'm thinking they're pretty sure you went all you went all fan but it's okay because he is an incredibly charismatic, you know, that combination of being able to talk and get one's ideas across at the same time as being really, really smart is really, really attractive.
See, unfortunately, I am in a tunnel and I am in Los Angeles.
Oh, am I going to lose you because you're in the tunnel? I think I just did. Well, darn. Haven't heard from Tracy in a while, but hopefully we will hear back. In the meantime, I will go onward, or we will go onward. Hey, welcome to the program. And, okay. Hey, welcome to the program. One more time. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Brother Bob, how you doing?
Brother Albert, I knew one of these daggum buttons would work.
I'll tell you, the other one was me, but I squeezed my shoulder, and next thing you know, the stupid phone went out, and whatever. I was just sitting here pacing, loving the show. Tracy, you know, that's a beautiful little story she was just telling. And, you know, well, real quick, of course Van Jones is smart and charming and intelligent and everything else he is. He listens to the horn. What's up, Van?
Hey, Van.
Anyway, what's going on, buddy? You know, so I may shut
solar panels on every roof.
Soul pounds on every roof, brother. Get it going. You know, and you know what? And racism isn't dead. No. But just like the propaganda and the stuff that Dave was talking about, they just become more and more ridiculous. They're almost fading out. They're getting paler and duller and duller. And
oh,
duller.
the hissy in the Twitter hissy in Boston over Joel Ward taking the Bruins out in Game 7. It's almost like the last barbaric howl of a tyrannosaur sinking in a pit.
Of a very old and toothless tyrannosaur with a missing limb and one craggly cataract eye, and it's dying. People see through this shit so fast now. We see through the marketing so fast now. You know, that's the beauty of this. It's like, you know, even in China, you know, they unleash the internet within that country, and now they don't understand. It's like cockroaches, except it's all up in our minds. You know, and Sir David does a noble deed for the realm of the horn by, you know, providing anyone for the Game of Thrones box set. My goodness, is that some of the best TV that's ever been put on TV?
And see, I'm totally clueless, Brother Albert.
Oh my God! And Peter Dinklage. Oh my God! It just, the man must be 4 foot eight tall, 4 foot three, whatever he is. He is a giant. You cannot keep your eyes off him, and you don't even realize he's small anymore. He's just unbelievable. It's just
okay. Now I am totally. I gotta see this.
Oh, and everyone in the cast is good. He just is the Beetlejuice. He is the Cygnus CX or whatever it is. That giant star that's even bigger than Beetlejuice. I mean, he is just he's just monumental in the show. Jimmy John's. You know what, Brother Bob? Jimmy John's or McDonald's? Go with Jimmy John's. It's not that bad. It's better than Subway a little bit, depending on, you know, when
you're... Yeah, because I just developed this bias against, you know, if you're a pal of Willard Romney, I don't want anything to do with you, and because I guess Jimmy's out there giving him money, right?
Oh, no, forget him then. Don't eat that shit. Oh, no. Go home and make something yourself. You know, I mean, it is a little more expensive. It wasn't
expensive. You know, at this point in my life, unless Jimmy John sells broth, I ain't going through the door.
You know, coconut water. They have these new drinks at my little store over here. They have this coconut whole green tea, papaya juices. You can drink juices, right?
Let's
get you on some juice.
Oh, I'm juicing. Yeah. I'm juicing. That's how I'm keeping my blood sugar in order. The other thing I'm doing, since we're talking along these lines.
Fresh squeeze.
One of my neighbors is studying holistic medicine and gave me a call. She's being taught by this by a Pakistani doctor, and oddly enough, they've been finishing a unit on, because lo and behold, it's something that's epidemic around here, if not pandemic. Gallbladders. And so they were doing a unit on sick gallbladders. And he said, he's a real live MD doctor. And he said, before I ever sent him for surgery or anything, I tried to get him stabilized. And he said, I put him on a regimen of a tea made of cardamom and turmeric seed.
I was just going to say turmeric.
And so since then, I've been crushing up some cardamom and some turmeric and putting it in my chicken broth because, you know, after the first 15 or 16 mugs of chicken broth, you start wanting some variation in the theme, if you know what I mean.
I certainly know what you mean. I certainly. What about fiber?
I can't irritate the gut. It's got to just go in there and keep moving. Because anything that makes any of those little ducts that pour stuff into my intestine, gets the little Republican in my belly all upset.
Even like maybe a psyllium husk?
Right now, I'm not making the gut work at all. Because the next step is to stick my butt back in the hospital, which I would like to avoid like the plague, because they have the plague there. And stick that nasogastric tube down my throat or feed me through my arm or something and shoot the last hole I had. It still got a stick. My God, that thing they put in my arm was the size of a 10-penny nail. I mean, I could feel the vein stretching, for God's sakes.
Oh, Brother Bob, I got that same needle, and he hit my elbow on the inside. Oh, you just gave me the willies.
Yeah, see, I mean, I had this really, really good friend who went in for a needle biopsy of his liver. And, yeah, he was rolled over on one side, and they got this long thing that's kind of like a dart gun with a needle in it, or like the little lancet hickey that you test your finger with, only it's got a long needle in it that's hollow and collects, you know, tissue samples. And they were going to check his liver for, like, cirrhosis, Hep A or Hep C or one of the hepatitis. And so he sticks it on him, and he goes ka-chunk and vroom, and it pops, you know, just goes in, pops back out, and he looks at the end of the needle and says, damn, we didn't get nothing. So he says, you know what, we're going to have to go deeper. And he clack, 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 click, 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 you know, make sure that, you know, puts a little more muscle behind that needle, and cocks it again, puts it over the same hole, and goes, and the next thing my buddy knows, he's clinging to the ceiling like Sylvester the cat, having seen that baby kangaroo that he thought was a rat. I mean, and what dude had done was blown right through his liver and taken out his gallbladder. So, whoosh, they rush him off to surgery and bring that thing out in chunks. I'm ruining someone's dinner right now. Sorry, Scott.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard you say. Ever.
Oh, see, I was called to.
You were sick.
Yeah.
Oh, Bob,
I got called to my buddy's bedside before they took him off, and it gave me that thing that happens in hospitals that you hate, where the person kind of weakly raises their hand and motions for you to get down close to their mouth so they can speak to you, and he goes, "Kill him."
Hello. you finished strong on that one. Well, that was tough. That was a tough ride in, Bob. Oh.
Sorry. Pocket.
Let's get you up to Canada or France, somewhere civilized place, and get you some health care. You know, we'll all cover the bill when they, you know, they'll send it to you. You make monthly payments. We'll hook you up. You know, hopefully I get this, I've been working nonstop on my, little thing here. I'm gonna get a hold of Patty. Appreciate that. We're gonna talk. I can't make promises of things I don't have, but once I have it, you have it. That's how I'm looking at it, so.
Well, thank you, brother.
Oh, brother Bob. Don't tell those kind of stories, though. What kind of savagery is this?
Well, that's the savagery. Did I mention that this also happened in West Virginia?
Yeah, I did that. That's where I pictured it. And get to Mars or something. This is crazy. Get on with Newton. I heard he's leaving in a little bit.
Yeah, no kidding. That gaseous stuff is sort of falling out of the rocket ship even as we speak.
Oh, speaking of space.
Have you noticed that Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist in his spacesuit, looks a lot like the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man?
That's a good one. Send that one for Miles. That's a good one.
You can use that, Van.
He doesn't even need a helmet. We go Leroy head. That's what he's got. Look at him. Look at him with his cute tip. Oh, so huge. But speaking of space, you know, did you happen to catch the Daily Show when they were talking about James Cameron's little plans and joint venture to do? I mean, speaking of, you know, what the core of this program, the heart of it, the beating heart of it, with the coal.
No, what?
Asteroids. Oh, you didn't see this?
No.
James Cameron, you might have been in the hospital. Oh, brother Bob, hold on. Oh, and real quick, before I forget. hint.fm/wind. Go, everybody, check it out. Look at that cyclone over them. Oh, it's like right in the heart. Look at that. That's crazy what's going on. So anybody in that region and any of those feeders, watch out for some tornadoes. It's not looking so hot. But speaking about James Cameron, you know, James Cameron is, because now, what is this, his third $1 billion film or whatever, and now he's re-releasing another $1 billion film. So, I mean, you know, this guy's making so much money that, you know, once you get billions of dollars, what else can you do? You know, I mean, you know, and by the way, Larry Flint has more class than that. Larry Flint might be like Jimmy Carter, you know, where the force is strong in him, and he really only kind of does that when there's something that he wants to prove a point on, and I don't think he cares very much about Tim Tebow's nonsense. Man, is he going to be a green stain. Anyway, you know, so, James Cameron, they're going to go up into space, and they're going to try to see if they can grab an asteroid, maybe maneuver it back into a safer Earth, you know, far-out orbit, and have these, you know, things, and they're going to mine them. Now, that is just, if we start doing that, the manufacturing process out in space, I mean, the things we can make out there will completely... It'll be a complete paradigm shift. We will rapidly move. I mean, Michio Okaku, the physicist, says we're about a 0.7 or some deal like that in terms of civilizations on his scale or one of the scales that the scientists have, you know, all the way up to four, type four civilizations where they've completely transcended the universe and all that other jazz. They have complete power over, you know, they're the world builders out of Hitchhiker's Guide.
Okay.
You know, basically, that's what he's talking about.
Yeah, and Marty just noted that Cameron's an investor and advisor in the venture.
I can't wait till the Mega Millions gets to be $1 billion. How could I not?
You're buying in.
I mean, I'm in there. Get me up there. I want to ride. I want to go be a space miner. You know, grizzly, big old cigar. Can you see it?
When the miners bust into that tunnel where that innocuous looking rock is, and it starts like dissolving people, and because they don't realize that the little stones around it are actually its eggs. There's going to be stuff out there, Albert. There's just going to be stuff out there. And I don't know if we've got anybody who can do the Vulcan mind meld and scream, the pain, the pain! My babies!
Hey, it's better than poisoning our children, toxifying Bob Kincaid's gallbladder and family.
Oh, yeah, you know, what? There's an article out on that that folks really ought to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
It's at a site called environmentalintegrity.org. It's under their news reports mm-hmm. section.
Mm-hmm.
EIP report, 116 disposal sites at 49 coal-fired power plants polluted with arsenic or other toxins.
Mm.
EPA Freedom of Information Act request uncovers violations of, and there's going to be a list here. People ought to pay attention to this. EPA Freedom of Information Act request uncovers violations of Safe Drinking Water Act and public health risks at 28 previously unidentified collection ponds in, are we ready to make our list? Colorado, Iowa, North Carolina, South Carolina, Texas, and, of course, West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, there's elevated, unsafe, you know, as in bad for the humans, levels of arsenic at no fewer than 22 plants. Manganese, that destroys the nervous system in high concentrations at 22 sites. Boron, it rots the stomach, intestines, liver, kidney, and brain when ingested at 12 sites. Selenium, it just ain't good for you at 13. And then there's cadmium. You know, every Easter I get me one of them cadmium cream eggs, Albert.
My kids love them. They're delicious.
That's a toxic pollutant that can damage the kidneys, lungs, and bones at 10 of the sites.
No, I take it back. That's the worst thing you ever told me. Those cadmium eggs are bad for you? Oh, Bob. What are you doing to me? Come on.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Dude. Yeah, Jack in Shreveport was there with us. Ah, yes, Bob. You're talking about breaking through and finding the Horta, H-O-R-T-A. Yeah, the silicon turtles that were in Star Trek. Silicon turtles.
Oh, man, we're getting there now. We going to the convention, Brother Bob?
We are so going to the convention. If Sulu's not there, I'm done.
Can I be Worf this year? I want to be Worf.
Yeah, because I'm going as one of those blue dudes with the antennae.
Yeah, I like those guys. They never focus on them enough.
Well, you know, see, Enterprise, that prequel that went back to the very first one, that it had Andorians in it. Yeah, see, you just thought I knew their name.
No, yeah, see, I haven't looked, yeah, you know, I'm keeping that one from the wife. We're still on Deep Space Nine with her, so, you know.
Okay, I loved, it took some getting used to, because everything just broke down all the time, but I loved Enterprise. I thought it was a great show. I loved their little opening theme music, and it was a wonderful show.
Yeah, Voyager's got on my nerves a little bit, a couple things. But
well, that was lost in space. That was lost in space with Federation uniforms.
Yeah, I had a couple good ones, but some of it was lost. I mean, that's the other thing, you know. Once you've been through the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine, and
Deep Space Nine was easy to love. Voyager, not so much. Okay. But they just completely screwed up Enterprise after like season two.
Oh, don't tell me these things.
Well, sorry.
Because we already have tricorders, and everyone's going to be holding a medical tricorder. It will be done. That is what it will be. And we'll figure out how to blast those little globules that are blocking up your gallbladder, because there's got to be a better way. Come on, people.
See, Marty's being a crank here, Albert. He says, tell Albert he need not show his wife any Star Trek past DS9. I liked Enterprise. I did. I just did.
All right.
You know, because I like Scott, what's his name, that played the captain.
Bakula.
Yeah, Bakula. And you know, he had that adversarial relationship with the hot Vulcan woman, the T'Pau, and you know, that's T'Pau when she was a young hot Vulcan, and not when she was like all ancient and stuff and trying to make Spock get married.
Yeah, I like how they keep the congruencies a little bit, you know. But I like what it inspires even more. And, you know, we're mining, if we stay, I mean, you know how fast we can start mining asteroids? I mean, really, we can start doing this now. You know, you know how many of the kind of materials, do you know about Z-Blan?
No.
Z-Blan is?
Z-Blan?
Z-Blan is a fiber optic cable made out of fluoride. Now, this is one of the really good uses for fluoride. And if you can't make it on Earth because the gravity of the Earth ruins it and makes bubbles in it. But in zero gravity or very low, you know, zero gravity, you know, they kind of make it on the Vomit Comet. Can you imagine? Can you imagine? All right, hey, we need you to go up and make this special fiber optic cable. You got to go in the Vomit Comet. You're going to be going up and down, up and down, up and down for 12 hours. We need about a meter of this stuff. Man, I don't think they pay that guy enough. But anyway, in space, we can make Z-Blan. And Z-Blan is a fiber optic cable that literally has... It just transmits. It's like a fiber optic superconductor. So there's no signal loss. I mean, we can make that in space. We can make space glass, the strongest material we've ever even conceived of. I mean, it literally is the most ridiculous thing. They used to have a demonstration online, and NASA quickly took it down, and I haven't seen it for years. But they used to have a demonstration of it where you would have a square of steel and a square of titanium and a square of this space glass, and they drop ball bearings on each at the same time. The steel would go doot, doot, doot. I told you this story. And the titanium would really bounce pretty well. But that space glass, you couldn't see it for about a minute and a half because it wouldn't slow down. It was just the most ridiculous material you've ever even... It's Willy Wonka stuff. And these are the kind of things, I mean, it really is. And, you know, who knows what are the kind of things and the developments we will actually be able to achieve out there, much less all the other technologies.
And see, I'm one of those space nerds who thinks that it's absolutely criminal when you consider the titsy, bitsy, teensy, weensy, almost not there amount of the NASA budget.
Yeah, a sixth of a cent of our tax dollars.
I mean, I've got a senator who swears that Big Coal has never received a dime in federal government subsidies. But by the same, you know, we don't need to be giving corporate welfare to the wind energy industry. Just like that goober from Kansas, Mike Pompeo, that I was reading about last night. If you give them money, they'll just come back year after year. Oh, we promise we'll get it right next time if you just give us some more money.
Mm-hmm.
Funny,
yeah.
He's accusing the wind industry of doing that, but it's actually who that does that for the last how many? Oh, 100 years?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yeah, the hypocrisy, they know no shame.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. If we could... Yeah. I mean, never. You want to talk about a renewable energy resource? Not the wind, not the sun. If we could figure out some way to harness right-wing hypocrisy, it would never be night on this planet anywhere again.
I hope to one day awaken these poor people. I know it's probably impossible, and you know it'll just be, you know, no matter what you say, they're going to say the opposite. And they'll just continue on that path constantly and constantly until eternity. I mean, that's another reason we need to get out in space. Maybe they'll feel like, oh, we can go back to the frontier. You know, that's how they cleaned up Europe, right? I'm not trying to be a jerk, but, you know, kind of, isn't it? You know? Like, oh, yeah, go ahead, there's all free land. And, oh, we're going to Mars. You know, get them out there on spaceships and mining asteroids and... Yeah, you can sell it to a profit. We'll pay you, what do you call them, Loonians? Yeah, you can have Loonians. We'll print Loonians nonstop. Yeah, here you go. Here's your Loonians. I mean, come on.
Well, I've been getting emails from our buddy Marty for a couple of weeks now asking when we can start referring to Willard Romney as Zaphod Beeblebrox.
No. It's Captain Kolob. No, you can't be Zaphod. Zaphod was funny. This guy's not funny.
There's not 10 cents worth of funny in that man.
I see where he's going with it. He's got, you know, two heads and three arms and everything else. Mittens is, Mittens has help putting on his magic underpants, you know what I mean? So, I mean, but real quick, speaking of these politicians, that CISPA, right?
Yeah.
Right? You were talking about that earlier on. You know, we really need to start allowing people to serve based off performance. And if you make, you know, scummy bill after scummy bill after scummy bill, because they never stop with this shit. It's constant. It's just like, oh, today we're going to sit there, we're going to drug test you if you want to buy milk. And we're going to sit here, we're going to...
And, you know, I mean, yeah, no, you're not really being sarcastic. I saw that thing the other day where the right wing wants to drug test recipients of child support. Did you catch that one, Albert?
No, I didn't. Thank God I didn't.
Now we're not talking about WIC. We're not talking about food stamps, any sort of government benefit. We're talking about a couple that, you know, I mean, you know, and you have to acknowledge the reality. The relationships fail, and sometimes they fail after the two people have had children together. And then the court comes in and sorts out the custody issue, and, okay, well, you're going to have joint custody, but you're going to be the primary caregiver and the primary residence, and baby's going to come and visit you. And now, since all the caregiving's going on over here, you're going to write the child support check to go that way. The government is not involved in any way in giving anybody any money.
Mm-hmm.
But I forget which walking piece of human excrement, which little gallbladder in a business suit it is. But some Republican out there thinks it would be a great idea to make sure that any and it's usually women. I mean, let's deal with it. Any woman receiving child support payments has to go pee-pee in a cup for him.
Yep.
To make sure she's not out there buying the marijuana with daddy's hard-earned dollars.
Mm-hmm. That's not, you know, it sounds like to me, it sounds like an extension of the war on women.
I think you would be correct.
I mean, come on now. I mean, and it's like, come on, how many hoops you make them jump through? I mean, all I can say is I'm thankful that we had the system put in that we had when we had it. When I was a little kid, because I feel so bad for these kids. What are they supposed to do? What did they do? Why do they hate these fetuses so much? Why? What is it about these fetuses? I mean, the children that they hate. I mean, they want to sit here and call us abortion. You know, that's all we live for. Oh, we live for abortion. That's right. You know, I got 35 today, Bob. How many did you get?
Oh, I slacked a little bit today. I was only good for 3.5. I was halfway done with one when the show started.
You got many credits. You've been such a outstanding comrade in the battle against fetuses that.
You know, and I mail them off to the abortion octoplex in Kansas.
Oh, do you? Oh, that's a good one. I fry them and dip them in chocolate. It's delicious.
Oh,
but,
one of those little fountains like they've got on the cruise ships? Yeah, yummy.
It's delicious, just all over the place.
Although, if you want to go savory, there's always the spicy hot mustard with a little bit. Oh, special.
Oh, you could cajun them up and then suck the heads.
Oh yeah.
We can roll like that all day, but you know. But that's what I mean. This is the crazy that these people live in. This is this freaking collab. Freaking world they live in. What the hell are they talking about? What is this nonsense? You know, I mean, just for a disclaimer, I hope nobody's getting too sick about what we were just saying, but that's the kind of mind. We just took you into the mind of the governor of Mississippi, Stan, because that's the kind of crap he says about us. So that's how delusional these people are. These people are fake.
Yeah, that would be Governor Bryant.
Yeah. I mean, come on now. We got a clean house in 2012. Clean house. I would love Van Jones 2016.
And I guess the first house cleaning is going to take place right there where you are, Albert.
I'm coming. Yeah, it's coming soon, isn't it?
Yeah, it
I
is.
Just saw
and
that.
And things are looking grim for the gallbladder party in the Senate there in Wisconsin.
I'll tell you what, Brother Bob. The only thing that we don't have yet, and we better get it in order, is we better just figure out one candidate. That's what we need. Because right now, I mean, you'll see a few Stan Walker signs, and I will certainly. I promise. When I, you know, if we ever get together again, when we get together again, I'm going to show you a house. And he just does it just to goad the people that shop at the store I shop at. Because let's face it, the people that buy the stuff that I buy, they care about what they're putting into their bodies, and they're trying to do whatever they can to do so.
Right.
So they happen to land on a particular... political spectrum, and comrade. So, you know,
got it to survive.
He thinks he's goading us. This guy thinks he's goading us with his beat-up metal trash can and his couch on the front lawn all wet from the rain. Get out of here with your freaking pickup truck. Get out of here, you freak. You can stand, Walker. Yeah, yeah. Look at where you're standing. Look at where you're sitting. Look at where you're living. It hasn't worked yet, has it? Not yet, but it could. Anyway.
Yeah, what? Every Friday they draw the Mega Millions. Every Tuesday and every Friday. It's gonna happen.
And every day I get a scratch off. And you know, it'd be, you know, I'm not saying that I wouldn't enjoy something like that, but I drop a couple bucks, but then I forget about it. Heck, I pick up tickets 6 months later. I'll be the kind of guy that answered you here. On the last day of the last thing for the ticket that I just won. Oh, there's Albert. Oh, there he is. He found his ticket in the, you know, bottom of his shoelace over here. And, that's how I would do it. But, you know, that's how I look. You know, if it's going to strike you, it's going to strike you. But these people count on it. And it's just sad. You know, I'm sitting here doing, you know, I mean, now I'm doing a lot of research regarding LLCs and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da and tax, you know, this and that, tax that. What are they talking about? It's almost like they give it to you. You know, it's like, what are you talking about, small businesses? Man, you can start a small business. They can't wait for you to fail on a whole lot of levels. But at the same time, you know, America's not that rough. America's not that bad. You know, what are you talking about? You don't want to pay taxes? Oh, you don't want to pay for roads? You don't want to pay for infrastructure? If we didn't have infrastructure, we would have been done. You know, if bridges kept collapsing between the Mississippi and, between the Mississippi, between Minnesota and Wisconsin and so on and so forth and everywhere else, Chicago, I mean, man, Chicago's infrastructure is rough. But I thought the president, he's from Chicago, he's going to take care of, it's cronyism. Nah, man, come on. We have this giant, enormous country with all this infrastructure, and we need space glass to build bridges with. We need Z-Bland to freaking get our telecommunications so your damn phone works everywhere it needs to work. And, this is the thing. We need to get to the freaking 21st century already. We got Mittens, Magic Underpants, Captain Kolob with his, 18th century Scientology. Come on, seriously? You mean seriously? That guy's a choice? For real? For real? He barely eked out above Newton? I mean, in Santorum? What?
Well, see, I read that story about back when Willard was a college student at Brigham Young. And, Jesus, Brigham Young, please. And how, I forget, they called themselves the Pumas or the Wildcats or something club.
The Friskies.
Right. And reminiscing years later, the buddies all look at each other. Well, we used to say that Willard would be the first Mormon president. We used to say, if not him, who?
No one. That's your answer. You freaks. For real. Ooh, Mittens. Get out of here with that. That guy's ridiculous. That guy, I guess, he's a Beetlebrox model. No doubt about it. It's in his CPU. That guy is freaking, get out of here with that guy. Can't stand that. They can't even get enthusiastic about him. And you said that, like I was saying earlier, they're fading out. Joe the Plumber is endorsed by Alan West, and then we waiting for what, Sarah Palin to blow out the freaking coal? Give me a Joe the Plumber. What do you got? Get the frick out of here.
Well, no, it's like Jim was talking about, Albert. When Alan West is running around reprising roles from the Manchurian candidate, there are 75 communists in the House of Representatives. Well, did I say 75? No, there's eight. And Jim recalling that magnificent scene where Angela Lansbury, with her idiot husband, takes the bottle of Heinz 57, can you, and puts the ketchup bottle on the table. Can you remember the number 57? See? Yeah.
Alan West.
Idiot.
Well, what is he talking about? I don't even know how.
Well, no, it turns out he says, they asked him for details. He said, well, what I was talking about was the House Progressive Caucus. That's how many people they've got in it. Well, no, yeah, okay, dimwit, but, now we'll be needing the proof that they are members of the Communist Party. Can you do that? Well, no, they're Democrats. Okay, let's try this again. I realize you're a little bit slow, Alan. You said they're communists. We need, and I know this is a word that you're not familiar with, we need proof. And, of course, you know, necessarily he then will go where Donald Trump went in front of the... I'm the proof. I'm the expert. I've been recognized all over the world for all the stuff I know about tourism because I got hotels, right? I'm the expert. Well, I'm the proof. I said there's 81 or 92... The communists in the house. That's your proof.
That's your proof.
If you throw her in water and if you throw them in water and they float, they're communists, I tell you.
No doubt. Yeah. Well,
these great comedies that we love so well are proving to be prophecies instead.
Yeah, they are, aren't they?
I mean, how bad is it? I ran that clip before the program, and I saw Willard tell these college kids to take a chance. And I was suddenly transported to days in my misspent college youth when, you know, because you didn't always have a date on Friday night, you're sitting in the room watching a precious videotape that nobody had, and you had to, like, go to the public library and research things and find a company, and you own it, and it's The Bank Dick by W.C. Fields, and you're watching him sit there, take a chance, take it while you're young. My uncle, Effingham Huffnagel, an heir ascensionist, took a chance. He took a chance that he could jump out of a balloon from 3,500 feet and land in a pile of hay. Well, did he make it? No, it's precisely my point. Had he been a younger man, he might have. And that's the politics of 2012, and that film was made in 1935.
Yeah. That's how far, that's how much they're reaching, they're grasping.
Oh, they're selling beef. The Republicans are selling beefsteak mines.
I mean, does this resonate with anyone? I mean,
I don't even know if that, I do that stuff, and I don't even know if it resonates here in the Horn family, because it is admittedly obscure, but God, it's true.
No, not what you said, what he says. That's what I want to know, is what he says something that resonates with anyone other than the obvious.
I mean, I don't think everybody sitting in that room at Otterbein College, I don't think that they were all there because mommy and daddy were writing the check. I suspect that there's a substantial number of people at Otterbein who are there on student loans.
And he's in support of what, doubling the rate?
Yeah, he's in support of borrowing the money from your mother and your father.
Yeah. So he can only pay 13% tax? And give what? What did he give?
I mean, this is one of those media follow-up moments. I'd like to know if anybody stood up and said, Willard, we're on a, I can call you Willard. You can call me Fred because, you know, you're unemployed and I'm a college student. We're in the same place, right? Your sons have a $100 million trust fund that you've never paid and they won't pay a penny of tax on. Did you do that so that they wouldn't have to borrow from you when they went to college? I mean, how does that happen? Because I need to tell my mom and dad how they can set up a $100 million trust fund for me. Well, that's easy, son. First you take $100 million. You know, it's like that old gag about burglars, the recipe for burglar's chicken.
Okay, I don't know that one.
Okay, the first step in, it's delicious, burglar's chicken. And the first step in burglar's chicken is first steal a chicken.
Oh, I should have known that one.
Yeah, you kind of saw it coming from a couple of miles away.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, you want to set up a $100 million trust fund for your kids? Well, first get $100 million. Oh, well, okay. And then Willard, what?
Yeah, well, it's like the Kids in the Hall sketch, remember, when they're giving the money, make money speeches in Seattle, where they usually give them in Seattle. And they talk about, you know, Was anyone in a trailer park that burned down? I don't know if you're familiar with that.
No.
Anyway, that's what's resonated in my mind. Yeah, is anyone burned in a trailer park? Well, then you, the bank, they owe you $100,000, and don't let the bank tell you different. That's all, yeah. I mean,
I hear kids in the hall, and all I hear is I'm squeezing your head.
Yeah, it's kind of squeezing. Yeah, well, of course they're squeezing your head. Those guys are all about psychology. And, you know, I mean, it really, yeah. I mean, and the reason I guess it resonates with me is because instead of, you know, I've never been in a position to steal a chicken, but I have been in a position to be in one of those stupid seminars.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's real. It's pretty much real. And then, of course, they always want to sell you their music that they make, which, of course, propels me into Best of Show with Captain and Tate. Bow wow! Delish! Bow wow!
Oh, how I love it. No, he really has two left feet.
He does have two left feet. I mean, and it's...
What a beautiful special effect that was, just to show him walking away like that.
Yeah, those are some gem films. If you haven't seen all those, that Cruise films of, you know, Waiting for Guffman, Best in Show, you know, Spinal Tap is their first, I think their
Mighty Wind hit. Absolutely destroyed
Mighty
me.
Wind. Oh, yeah, Mighty Wind was great. Mighty Wind was excellent. I haven't seen it enough, actually. I need to watch it a few more times. But, yeah, I mean, and that's these, come on, we'll borrow from your parents. Your parents ain't got shit. They ain't got shit. I'm lucky to have what I have, and I barely have nothing. I have nothing. I mean, goodness gracious, I got a window, and I got a pot, and I can throw it out
the window, right.
That's about what I got, and I got, you know, I do have a father, and I do have parents, you know, mother-in-laws, even though I got to deal with all that craziness. But, you know, we'll see. You know, hopefully it's, I've been doing math and doing this and doing that, so hopefully I can make what I think I can make. I mean, 25 pizzas is, a day is... You know, that's good. That's actually, if you do the math, it's kind of substantial. So, I mean, especially from in my world, you know, I mean, that would just be, you know, complete, you know, it would be like, it would do to me what paying a fair price for coffee does for people in Ethiopia. You know, just paying them, I mean, just doubling the 4 cents for 2.5 kilos that they were getting would completely revolutionize their life. And then to pay them actually 50 cents or $1, $1.25 is unbelievable for these people. It's almost like they have oil under the ground now. And they can get clean water, and they can sit here and buy and think about buying solar panels and having electricity and actually going from subsistence farming hand to mouth, constant starvation and war and strife to going to having a more advanced communication system than the president did in 1975. Or more, and I mean, even president had in 1990. You know what I mean? These are the kind of things that just a little tiny bit of effort and a little bit of, you know, consciousness can change. And the better that those worlds are, the more that those people have, the less we have to worry about Iran and a bomb. The worst we have to worry about Iran wanting a bomb, because we all know on the horn that Iran probably would be the most tactical decision for them would be to not have a freaking bomb. Because to have a bomb would just invite attack. To even have 1/1,000,000th of a parts per billionth of, you know, plutonium-199 or whatever, 290, whatever the frick it is. You know, to even have that. That shows that they're trying to refine to a bomb would mean their total obliteration. And I think that civilization...
And I think the Iranians do understand that, that the people who blow people up, who are in the blowing people up business over here, don't give a about them. Insofar as, you know, we're not... Okay, no, we're not just going to bomb the scientists. We're not just going to... And Jesus, that's just crazy to say. We're not just going to bomb the Ayatollah. We're going to bomb 5-year-olds. Yeah, we're going to... Because that's the way bombs work, Albert.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, we're going to...
They want to drop.
Yeah, we're going to bomb the pharmacist. We're going to bomb the gas station attendant. We're going to bomb the mommies. We're going to bomb the swing sets. We're going to bomb the swimming pools. We're going to bomb the gardens. We're going to bomb everything.
With one bomb.
There are two.
And that's what they're looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah? I mean, come on. I mean, this is what we're looking at. We know we come on. And honestly, yeah, just like David was saying earlier, that's propaganda. You know, we all know it's propaganda. Nobody buys. buys that? Who the hell buys that? For real? Nobody's going to war with Iran. We're not supporting that. That level of fear in this country isn't there anymore, and everyone can feel it. Just look. Just, it's right in front of you right now. It's in your chest. You really feel that? It's not like Iraq, and it's certainly not like Afghanistan was. The level of...
I guess, who is it? Bob Kerry, who isn't exactly anybody I'd call liberal, but he's running for Senate in Nebraska. He had the unmitigated gall the other day to say that invading Iran would make Iraq look like a cakewalk. Of course, remember we were promised that we would be welcomed as liberators in Iraq. That's what all those explosions going off were. Those were celebratory fireworks celebrating us liberating. And I guess we just happened to get a little too close to them once in a while.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, and be honest, you know, I mean, let's be real straight. The Iraq war was going on for what? I mean, if you count to when we start pulling out, it was going on from day one to the end of Desert Storm until whenever all the troops are gone.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
think about that.
Yeah, are we really ready to invade and invest and occupy Iran?
No.
No, because I don't not see. I don't think we can.
No. No. I mean, we can certainly contain them from attacking us, but we
even
cannot.
And that assumes, of course, that there's some minute, microscopic shred of evidence that they had any interest at all in doing that. Now, if we want to make them want to attack us, there is one way of making sure that happens. And that's by dropping some bombs on some florists and gas station workers and maybe some children at a playground. Then they'll want to attack us, and they'll hate us for, oh, a millennium or two.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I talked the other night about this, the wonderful piece from The Chaser's War on Everything from Australia that I found over at Crooks and Liars. It was this brilliant little visual piece. The question being, where can you leave a Trojan horse? And they successfully left it at a race course. They left it in front of the Sydney Opera House. Oh, yeah, park it over there by the concrete block. We've got traffic problems here.
Yeah.
They successfully left it in front of the history faculty at Sydney University.
Yeah.
And every time they successfully left it somewhere, this big rubber stamp would be permission granted. And then they pulled up, and this, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and ruin the joke. If anybody hasn't been there to see it, it's too damn late. Then they pulled up in front of, I mean, you remember where Troy was, right?
Yeah.
It's located where Turkey is now.
Yeah, Turkey, yeah.
So they pulled up in front of the Turkish embassy. We've got this Trojan horse here, and we'd like to leave it, you know, it's a gift from the Greeks. We'd like to leave it here in front of your place. Is that all right? I'll have to ask the consul general. 2 minutes later, this functionary comes out and says, no, you can't leave that here. Permission denied. And it was the only place that denied them. And that's a memory that is 3,184 years old.
Mm. Well.
Anybody wants to leave a horse in front of your place? No, don't let them.
Yeah.
And it's a memory 3 millennia old.
It doesn't even work today. 3,000 years ago it worked. Today it doesn't work. Calling Barack Hussein Obama, you know, a Muslim socialist with his time machine, that shit don't work. It doesn't work. It's too late. It's over. And they just keep going, and they just keep getting crazier, and they keep reaching back in history, and now, oh, they pulled up 1957, oh, McCarthy, oh, let's go back to Hitler, oh, it's Hitler, oh, we're going to go back all the way to George Washington, oh, let's go back to Zeus. I mean, they've lost it. They're going the wrong direction. They've always been going in the wrong direction. The only direction we can go is forward. And, you know, that's what they're conservatives about. You know, they're just, they're disconnected. They're not even plugged in. They're almost like running, it's like a friggin' toy that you give your kids that just runs automatically, you know, and it's like the Energizer Bunny, but it's going, it's just the battery batteries are running out. These people don't even have it anymore. We've been saying for years that they're not, their feet aren't even on the frigging ground, and it's racist this and racist that, and this is, oh, we go, good shot, Zimmy, and da-da-da-da-da. They're speaking in tongues of mania. These people are lost, and they're done.
They and therefore, as our buddy Reverbo says, we say, listen, folks, we've idled the bus long enough. We're sorry, but we're going to have to close the doors now and go on down the road. We'll miss
you. Here's an umbrella.
Yeah, here's an umbrella and an apple and a road map.
There you go.
Hey, Albert, it's been a wonderful Friday night, brother. Have a great weekend.
You too, brother, and you know, I feel better. I know I said stay well, but I meant that in the best of intents. You know?
I understand completely. I'm going to be a very broth intensive guy over the weekend, and I will get better. All right.
Get that turmeric in there. Good for your belly. All right.
Bye now. Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? I heard a noise. Okay. Welcome to the program.
Well, what's going on, Bob?
Hey, what's happening, Spike?
Not much. Just still recuperating from our Super Tuesday this past Tuesday here.
Yeah, and you did get rid of a horse's rear end.
Tim Holden.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty good. I was actually at the victory speech and party for Matt Cartwright, as a matter of fact. Which is Matt, and it looks very good now because he's up against a Tea Party loon from the Republican side. So this will be the first
one of those birther, deather, tenther, booger eater types.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Someone who owns a nurse at home business from the Wilkes-Barre area. Another business crackpot.
I love the smell of urine problem. In the morning. It smells like victory.
Yeah. So. That really was the election right there, because the Pennsylvania Republican Party gerrymandered this district to basically be all Democrats. There's a few pockets of Republicans left, but basically every precinct that went blue in 2010 got gerrymandered into this so that they could make Barletta and Marino strong. And by the way, Marino's at the, I feel stupid. I'm having a little bit of a brain fart. The Mayo Clinic. He's starting to have some real bad issues with cancer as well. So that's another congressional race to keep an eye on because the candidate's health might be starting to seriously deteriorate.
And that can be an issue. Well, is there a credible challenger?
Yeah, there's a, from the next county over, there's a Democrat, pretty good Democrat running. I forget his name, Phil Scolio. I can't remember how to say his last name. He's Phil. He's a pretty good candidate too, but the thing that excites me the most about Matt Cartwright, this will be the first time I have someone in Washington, should he win, that actually knows who I am. Like, literally will see me and know me as Spike Rogan. That's nice to actually, for once, have the feeling that, hey, I actually have someone I could actually...
Well, yeah, it is. But, I mean, I got to tell you, by the same token, my congressman knows me, and it's not such a good feeling.
Not in a good way.
Yeah, not such a good feeling.
Well, you know, had I been stuck with Barletta for a long time, that might have happened to me. But luckily, as of January 2013, I'll be done with him. He'll be gone regardless of what happens in November for us here. Big sigh of relief. We have a lot of Latinos in my town here and partly in my precinct, so a very big sigh of relief to get rid of Lou Barletta around here. But, you know, I just want
He's
to point
just
out
toxic.
Something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. The Huffington Post, the day or maybe 2 days after our primary, did a piece and somewhat painted a false picture a little bit about the congressional race here. There were a lot of pro-environmental groups, people like that. The Postal Workers Union endorsed Cartwright, the Conservation League, Clean Water Action. There's a few of them. There was a PAC that went after Holden with ads. They spent at least $200,000 probably. It was the Center for Primary Accountability. Most of the donors for that are like Big Oil, Energy. Eric Cantor is a big donor to that PAC. And so the right wing and their foolish Beltway experts who never came to the area to figure this one out for themselves seem to think that their crackpot candidate would do better against a newcomer than Holden because I'm willing to bet that what they probably say is, well, we haven't been able to beat him. While he was in a very Republican strong precinct, but since they redistricted him into a very Democratic strong district, it's going to be hard for them to win. So why they spent all that money to defeat Holden is beyond me, since Holden would have voted for them. But I would just like to thank them for once again. The far right in this country is great at signing their own political death warrant, whether it's the war on women or things like this, where like they're going to get rid of the guy who would vote for them and inadvertently make a congressional district more than likely to be won by someone who's going to oppose them. So I would just like to thank those idiots for defeating Tim Holden, their guy.
And see, that's they are. They're idiots. And it's the same syndrome where, you, like I mentioned last night, you go out to Utah, and in his primary, the Orrin Hatch in Utah could not get a 51% majority in his primary, because there are a bunch of pissed off teabaggers that think he isn't ideologically pure enough because, I don't know, last year sometime he was seen actually speaking to one of those liberals, you know, a Democrat. You know, even if the so-called liberal Democrat was, I don't know, Joe Manchin.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just hilarious in that they, I think they've become so distorted in their primary races by the Tea Party. Some of them have lost fact reality. That doesn't apply in many general elections any longer. The Tea Party fat has died. It's not what it once was. It's becoming a smaller and smaller because these people were easily disenfranchised because they didn't get everything they wanted immediately, so therefore a lot of them have quickly given up.
Well, that's why I've said for a long time that they are, politically speaking, babies.
Yeah, and you know, especially in this precinct here, or in this, our state representative district that we have here within this congressional district, there was an effort by the local Republican who the last two times he ran for state rep, there was no Democrats on tickets, so he ran writing campaigns to get on both party tickets. In 08, he did quite well with single party Democratic voters riding Obama's coattail, even though he's a far right wing, can't wait to see him go sort of representative in the state capitol for me here. And this time around, we have a legitimate Democrat who was on the ballot, and he tried to run a writing campaign against her, and it looks like, as the count's going, he's going to end up failing miserably and having spent a lot of money to lose a writing campaign, because he seems to feel there's going to be blue coattails to ride come this general election. This will be the first time in a long time he's had an opponent during a presidential election year. I believe 2004 was the last time. That, yeah, because 08 was the last presidential election he ran, and he got the Democratic nomination, got some union endorsements, which is pathetic. But this will be the first time since 04 he's had an opponent. In 04, a lot of people here were bamboozled into supporting the GOP in those days. The demographics have kind of changed a little bit from the area from then, on top of the fact that many people are just sick of Republicans' BS. So I think that's another clear indication that the right wing, they don't know what's going on. They can't figure out how to win elections. Here's someone desperately hoping he can fool people into thinking he's a Democrat to win an election. I mean, and this is the slickest they got going, and it's not very slick at all. It's a party of dysfunction that is just going to continue to fall apart because they've moved too far to the right. It's actually laughable. Just like it was laughable, the Democratic committee person from Schuylkill County, Holdens County, said, oh, this indicates that the Democratic Party has moved further to the left. No, it's that some people are just so far to the right, even those in the middle of the road can't take it anymore. And I think this is just going to further hurt the Republicans. There's a rally in Harrisburg tomorrow. My mother's going. There's a, like, activist bust or something like that, where you pay so much per person to take a good bus, not a school bus, to the state capitals of Pennsylvania, I think New York, Connecticut. All tomorrow, there's going to be rallies at state capitals about the war on women, which the more the Republicans go after women, the bigger mistake they're making, because the two groups I see the most when I do poll security coming in on a regular basis voting are old people, and everyone knows that one, and women. Younger men in their 30s through late 40s, I believe, just don't show up in as more loyal numbers of voting as women in that age group. I think that's the biggest critical mistake to keep making, is they don't realize just because your primary is dominated by men, come general election time, there's going to be a lot of women voting. You know, they think everyone has the same long-term memory their own base has. You know, these right wingers, they only remember what they heard 30 seconds ago. That's why
I laugh, but it is absolutely undeniably true. That's why they can run around saying things like, well, that one, you know, that Kenyan Muslim, he destroyed our economy.
That's right. Well, that's why Mitt Romney could go to a factory closed in June 2008 and say it was Obama's fault. Yeah. Did you hear that one he did in Ohio?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and see, he understands.
And my personal favorite of all the things in the political spectrum this week.
I mean, there are silverback gorillas in zoos who know how to who remember which buttons to press in order to make the head of celery roll out the chute. Okay, they've got more acumen than the average teabagger voter has.
Is that why Newt keeps going to these zoos every place he goes on the tail end of his campaign?
Yeah.
His retirement tour? Is that why he gave us such an advance notice? This is like his arrivederci tour when Mario Andretti retired from racing. This is Newt retiring from being a loser.
Yeah, see, I looked this up a minute ago. I had to share it with you because it's right on topic. I had an email exchange with Mark out in Indiana earlier today. And, you know, because I've been talking about how I've decided that my gallbladder is the little Republican that lives in my belly.
Okay.
And, he says, yeah, and there's scarring too. There will be scarring. But he went on and he said a couple of bumper stickers on a scowling old lady's car at the little grocery store, here in Indiana. Bumper sticker number one, and of course you've got a scowling little old lady. Bumper sticker number one.
Tea Party. No longer racist, no longer violent, no longer silent.
And then bumper sticker number two.
You are not entitled to the money that I earned.
Mark said, what a nice lady. Does that mean they used to be racist and violent? Does she qualify as a walking gallbladder? And yes, she absolutely does. She is a walking gallbladder.
Yeah, I'm no longer racist. Hey, we were, but you know, we because you people complained, we took care of it. You know, how do you not
unless the Bruins are getting beaten in the seventh game of the first round of the playoffs.
Well, welcome to Boston sports fans. If I'm correct, the Red Sox fans were also historically not too kind to their early black players.
I seem to recall a certain Bill Russell having a few problems when he went to the Celtics.
Yeah, well, it's funny, too, because that was the city that kind of crossed the barrier for basketball, and yet that was the city that had the biggest problems for when it comes to kind of racist fans. Like, look at the Red Sox game. I mean, that crowd, it looks like they just left the hoods at home, man. There's not too many non-white people in that crowd. Lots of white people at Red Sox games. Although, I guess, again, it's so expensive to go to Red Sox games. That should explain everything. It's like floor seats in an NBA game. It's just so expensive. Good luck seeing many minorities there because they're not in that income bracket to pay those kind of prices as well.
But I love that bumper sticker. No longer racist, no longer violent, no longer silent. That implies, as Mark noted, does that mean they used to be racist and violent? Well, yes, it does. And it also means they used to be silent. And what I pointed out to Mark is these people have not been silent since their parents were taking them to John Birch meetings and Klan rallies.
They certainly haven't.
Because they are the same people, Spike. They are the same people.
Yeah, they were making plenty of noise with the racist thing. That's how we noticed that, actually. Had they been quiet, then we might have missed it. But they were plenty loud when the bone through the lips or the nose and the one sign of Obama and all these horrific racial.
Well, yeah, and that button at the immigration debate in front at the protests in front of the Supreme Court for the immigration arguments the other day, the SB 1070 Arizona arguments. That one button. Don't blame me. I voted for the American.
The American. I voted for the American.
Yeah, even though I mean, if we want to talk about birthplaces. Barack Obama was actually born in Florida, whereas I don't want to make myself sound like a weirdo, but this is a fact. If you look at where John McCain was born and they want to have that argument.
Yeah, he was born in another country.
He was, well, no, it's worse than that. John McCain was born in Panama, okay, because that's where his father was stationed, all right? Okay,
right.
Well, I mean, it's not a person's fault, I mean, but he was born on a military base, so that's a part of America, right? Wrong. He wasn't born on a military base. He was born in a Panamanian off-base hospital. He was born on Panamanian soil. But,
well,
you know, he's really palely, pathetically white and cranky and old, so he must be an American.
And an Arizonian to boot, because those people, they're so angry about people trying to take over their country from them. It's just kind of hilarious since, like, you know, how Arizona was obtained. And for that matter, how the West was, quote, won. My cousin did a parody video, actually, for his college class where he really was mocking that Arizona governor.
Yeah, the Gadsden so-called purchase.
Yeah, so, I mean, and his video was actually about invasive species and trees, but there's a lot of political satire about immigration in that video. It's pretty hilarious. A big fake mustache and just some great one-liners.
Fake mustaches are always fun.
Yeah, and before I go, I just want to point out back to the hot topic of the first hour, or the first half hour of calls, about the sandwich shops. As far as chain places go, actually Jimmy John's hoagies are really good. The cold cuts are better than the other big chain. It's a shame the owner is a right wing, but to be honest, that's not a surprise. I suspect probably about 85% of all chain.
Yeah, they probably all are.
Yeah, they'd be very rare to find someone who's probably not really ultra. You're probably more likely to find a libertarian than a liberal in the chain business for the most part. But I'll give them. I always, when I lived in Easton, went there frequently. It was one of the few places where you could get alfalfa sprouts as one of the toppings on your hoagie when you order it.
Oh, yummy!
Well, yeah, like hot peppers and all kinds of good stuff. Awesome pickles as well. I'm a big.
You know, I can't
fan.
Wait for the show to end so I can have a cup of broth.
Five Guys is the best burger chain. Actually, not too badly priced considering what you're getting there compared to other burgers.
Now, see, I think back though to, you know, the places that I've loved. You know, my favorite hamburger is available only in one place on the planet. It's just available only there. It's a little bit of nothing. It's a little storefront joint in East Florence, Alabama, called Stags's Grocery, and it is the God burger. It really, really is. And you know, if I start to thinking about some of the best subs I ever had, it didn't come from a chain. It's when I was a student up in Morgantown, and we would walk down the mountain, literally, to this place called the Spruce Street Sub Shop. And there was only one of them. I mean, there weren't even two in Morgantown. There was just one of them. And the bread was magnificent because it came from some obscure bakery in Pittsburgh. And the meat was good, and everything was just right about them. And I had one, though, a few years ago, last time I was up there, and they're still that good.
Yeah, well, that's the great thing about mom-and-pop sandwich joints in Philly is the hoagies generally have awesome rolls because most places use a baker out of – it's a big baker, but it's a very regional big baker out of South Jersey called Amoroso. No relation to the one from Trump. And it's an Italian company, I believe. And
sounds Irish to me, but
no,
I'm joking.
Yeah. But they are the brand who makes the specific special recipe ones for both Pat's and Gino's, and many other places use them as well. They're really, really a nice, like, crisp outside but soft inside.
Yeah, see, that's what's got to happen.
The best, and actually Jimmy John's bread's pretty similar to that in a way. But the best place for any sandwich whatsoever is not a chain for me, but down in the South Philly Italian market, a place called George's. So they've even been featured on PBS and things like that. I love Italian sausage, and you could get a cheesesteak all over Philly, but they offer an Italian sausage sandwich that's just awesome. You can get it really hot, and on my menu, the hottest one they have is Burn My Ass, where they put, like, actual whole long hot peppers on the hoagie.
Oh.
Awesome. They have Italian tripe there, and they have the best Italian roast pork in Philadelphia.
Oh, stop it.
Even
stop
have
it.
Broccoli
that's like, yeah, that's
it.
Like going to South Florida, going down to a little Havana or somewhere and getting a Cuban pulled pork sandwich. Oh, my God.
Yeah. I mean, the place kind of looks ratty. They only have, like, at best maybe eight seats in the place. Most of their business is
and those are the special places. You know, being in the Strip District in Pittsburgh and walking into Permanis.
Permanis has even kind of somewhat been corporatized
One original one down in the Strip District is still the 24 hours, seedy as hell,
But yeah, so if you ever find yourself in Philadelphia, South Philly, Georgia's, they're only open from like, I think, 10:30 in the morning to 5 at night. It's a lunchtime place.
You find that a lot. My favorite hamburger joint there in Alabama, I think they close by 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah. And also, what you were saying about barbecue places, spot on, man. If you can't smell that place from a little bit of a distance, it's not that good. There was a place in Easton you could smell from the road when you were just within a certain distance of it. Awesome. They did it more like a Carolina-style barbecue, North Carolina, really.
Yeah, with the tangy vinegar base.
Also.
Yeah,
vinegar base. They did great pork. And there's a guy by me here, and even though he's a giant right-winger, I still once in a while give him money, because actually he does do awesome beef brisket. I've had a beef brisket from a few barbecue places up north here, and that's like kind of an art many people still haven't figured out up north. They've figured out the pork, but the beef is a different deal. But he makes great beef brisket. So I overlook our political differences for the beef brisket. It's outrageous. And that's another place you can smell it before you're that close to it. You're just driving by it on, especially windy days, you can smell it for a little bit further down.
Yeah, you can't, that means that this, no, I mean, I'm as against pollution as anybody, but that hickory smoke is just, it's perfume.
Well, wood smoke is better for the environment and the carbons it releases as opposed to from combustible engines.
Oh, sure.
Like
yeah, absolutely.
So. Yeah, I mean, there's an argument to be made. It's actually healthier than places that use gas to barbecue in many ways. Especially since here we actually have a big problem with the ash borer beetle, who has decimated many of our trees around here. So we kind of need to get rid of a lot of wood. So this guy locally is actually using a very local tree that's been kind of destroyed by the beetles. But it's nice and dry, which makes it pretty good for using to barbecue with. And it's pretty plentiful around here. So he's not really using like a hickory or, you know, these traditional. That might be the other thing to it. It's a very unique local, and it's not ash trees that they're eating up here. It's another tree, somewhat defying the science behind what these beetles eat. I can't think of the name of the tree. It's like a smooth gray tree, the bark of it.
Birch?
No, they're not birch. They're not white. It's like a silver tree.
Huh. Some sort of poplar?
I'm not sure the name off the top of my head.
So now we have tonight's trivia research topic for the horn. And the name of the beetle again?
The ash borer beetle. It's like a neon metallic green beetle.
Ash? It's an ash tree.
But I don't think they are ash trees that are around here. That's the thing.
Huh. Well, no, it's probably some beetle that used to be only able to live in a climate where the temperature never, you know, where the temperature never rose above whatever, or, you know, didn't drop below or whatever, and it's been able to come south, you know, because there's no climate change, right, Spike? I mean, isn't that how it works?
Yeah, or maybe move north. I'm not even sure where. Yeah. I think it's something coming from the north, though, in this case. But, and interestingly enough, in my town, the Army has a facility here that does a lot in electronics, so therefore they probably have a lot of pallets coming in and out, and the hugest areas of contamination where it just looks like nuclear bombs went off is right near their entrances. So I'm willing to take a wild guess on who is the culprit behind the infested wood coming to this area. So needless to say, that's the other thing interesting about that guy's beef brisket is it's probably a flavor you only really taste around here because it's the local trees from around here, which is cool in many ways as well because a lot of these other barbecue places buy their wood from very far away, which involves a lot of trucking it and stuff. And I have to admit myself, sometimes there's local places that grow trees and then shred them up to sell as chips. There's a good chance I'm probably guilty of that as anyone else, since I like to use generally a mix of cherry and hickory when I do smoking on my own here, and using I use Royal Crown briquettes mixed with another brand of lump coal when I do it.
I love the I forget the name of it, but there's a brand of charcoal that's done very environmentally friendly, and it's out of Kentucky, and it's made out of old pallets, so it's hardwood. And it, you can see that it's old pallets, but it burns hot and it burns clean. And that I'll make my base fire out of that and then add my hickory to it as I'm smoking. Hey, Spike, I'm starving to death. Albert just suggested give Spike a toaster, but make him stop torturing you about food. More broth.
Close your eyes tonight, and instead of taste of chicken broth, just think of the taste of some Carolina-style pork.
I'll get the ashtray, and I've got some hickory chips outside, and I'll just set fire to a hickory chip, and I'll breathe hickory smoke while I'm drinking my chicken broth.
And then you got barbecue chicken.
And who could ask for anything more? Spike, have a great weekend, brother.
Hey, you too. Later.
Later. Bye now. That's our buddy Spike calling from PA. I love this stuff because these kind of conversations. I've got this little list in my head of, you know, if I show up somewhere, I know where to go to, right? And so, you know, I'll be needing my suggestions for Boston and Charlotte, please. Great non-corporate places to go that will, you know, assuming I'm eating food by then, of course. Hey, where's the best chicken broth in Boston, right? All this sandwich stuff. I guess the one thing we left out was the classic Chicago Italian beef. You want that wet? Yeah, I want it wet. Spicy. You want the peppers? I want the peppers. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Nobody. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'm back.
Oh, it's Tracy. You're out of the tunnel.
Motherfucking AT&T. I know you've missed me. Just me saying motherfucker probably just brightens your day.
It does. And it's Friday, too, so that makes it extra special, Tracy. It's MF and Friday.
Yeah, it's MF and Friday, yes. So I guess when you were talking, somebody said something about a man crush on Van Jones. Is that?
Yeah, as they said, you definitely were manifesting the symptoms of a Van Jones man crush.
Yeah, well, considering, yeah. But by the way, not only did he talk about, you know, the political thing, you know, one of the things that got me about what he talked about was what is truly a patriot. He's like, you know, he watches these people come to New York, and they first thing they do is go to the Statue of Liberty and look at, you know, and say, this is America, you know. And then he's like, well, did y'all look at the little inscription, you know, on the thing that says, give me your tithe, you're poor, give me your metal, you know, your metal masters, yearning to breathe free, you know, and because, of course, you know, that was what this country was built on, was immigration. You know, of course, the immigrants that are coming in now are the wrong color.
Well, and that's really the problem now, isn't it?
Yes. You know, those brown people.
Well, I don't know how, since I have you on the line, and since you are no one can turn you away from this ugly, ugly habit that you have of reading books, Tracy. And I don't know how much you've been listening lately.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you that for about the last month and a half, leading up to a conversation, three Mondays back, two Mondays back, I've been talking about this magnificent book called 1493.
No. Oh, no, I never heard of it. Oh, before I forget, here's another book that you guys need to put on your reading list.
Uh-huh.
The Warmth of Other Suns.
The Warmth of Other Suns.
Oh, the way you said you've met. Okay, basically, it's written by the first black woman.
No, the reason I said it that way was because we had a little MF and AT&T breakup there.
Okay, yeah, The Warmth of Other Suns. Basically, it's written by a black woman who was the first black woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize in Literature, Nobel Pulitzer Prize in Literature, in for journalists. She spent 14 years documenting the great black migration from the South to parts of, you know, to the North, to Detroit, Chicago, to New York, to and of course to the West, to L.A. It's the most magnificent thing I have ever read in my life.
Isabel Wilkerson.
Yes. And I met her.
Oh.
She did a book signing here in L.A. And, you know, because the thing about, you know, is about black people, and, you know, because people just think we were slaves, and, you know, but what these people did, because they just could not handle, they knew that in order for their children and for their family to have a chance in this country, they had to escape the South. Not leave.
Escape.
Not to say, I'm leaving and moving to California or whatever, you know, I'm transplanting myself. No. Escape. Running for their lives. Okay, now go back to what you were talking
about. Okay, well, I have to tell you, Albert just wrote in and said, oh, don't let her take it wrong. Tell Tracy I have a massive bromance for Van Jones myself, so. As Albert, because Van listens. Every now and then, Van uses phrases that get used on the horn first, so sometimes yeah. I think he does tune in. It just,
oh, Van does. Awesome, yeah. Awesome.
Well, I mean, you know, you won't know, and you wouldn't dare tell old Bob because then he'd get the big head or something, right?
He did talk about, the country. He's like, you cannot say you're a patriot and love this country if you're poor. And when the first thing he said, wait for it, mountaintop removal.
See, it was, he was talking about it some back in 2009 at PowerShift in D.C., Tracy. And I was working backstage, and I just sort of walked up to him, grabbed him, shook his hand, said, yeah, we got to get you to Appalachia. You're doing a good job. We got to make it plainer that we're being sacrificed here. We're being killed here. He said, I'm on it. And he's been real good about talking about it to people who otherwise wouldn't know about it. But you know what? Here's the cool part. There you were sitting at that lecture in L.A., you know, MF in L.A. because it's Friday. And he said mountaintop removal, and you knew exactly what he was talking about.
Nails.
And you could put that hand in the air and say, tell it.
And I pretty much said, I think I said, preach, brother, preach. I think I said that. I think I might have said a couple of amens, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the process.
Oh, Albert wrote it. That seals it. Hi, Van. We love you.
See? Like I said. So tell me about this book, 1493. Is it on Amazon?
Oh, yeah. I've got it on my Kindle.
Can I get it on my Kindle?
Yeah, it is brain warping, Tracy. I don't recommend books on the horn unless I've just, you know, you've got to, you know, unless it's really just all over me like poison ivy. It's got a sister book, a precursor book, 1491. You don't have to read that to read 1493, but it helps.
Let me guess, because, you know, every so often I do pick up a history book, and in the 1492, Christopher Columbus the ocean blue. So let me think.
No, in 1492, Columbus screwed the natives blue.
Okay. Gave them blue balls. Well, not blue balls. They didn't have...
Yeah,
they got
but yeah, yeah, so basically 1491 is about the New World before Columbus gets here. 1493 is about everything that comes out of Columbus's discovery of the New World.
Including syphilis, slavery... Right.
Thing I won't even try, Tracy. I'm talking about things that it is mind-bending from one page to the next, and you're going, holy shit.
Well, like I said, it was the same thing when I was reading, because, you know, as quiet as it's kept, black people, you know, because I have relatively young parents. And basically, when I was up until I was 20, there was five living generations. My great great grandmother was still alive until I was in my 20s. So I have my great-great-grandmother, my great-grandmother, my grandmother, and my mom. Tell me, ask me if I know anything about my history.
Yeah, see? And that's why, like, with this book, he spends a substantial amount of time laying out in very well-written prose, in ways that are undeniable, the effect of and the reasons for the transportation of and expansion of African an African presence in the New World. And he makes the argument that the New World was shaped not by white folks.
No shit, really?
Yeah, he says, you know, he said, there's a passage in there where Charles C. Mann, the author, says, the roads were built by African people. The waterways were plied by barges run by African people. The language was shaped, you know, one of these mush-mouthed goober cracker southerners, you know, talks like this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the proportionality of black to white in the South in early America was, Jesus, like 11 to 1.
Right.
So English was shaped. The way we speak English in the United States was shaped by African immigrants. And they're immigrants, whether they are brought here forcefully or of their own free will. It is still an immigration process.
Right.
A migration process.
And that was one of the things that...
And he talks about it in the context of what happened in South America, in Central America. He talks about the early steps toward some degree of liberation and freedom. And, no, you will sit down with this book, and you will... I promise you. You write to me if you don't. You sit down with this book, and you start reading 1493, and you will be talking to yourself. You'll be hitting that little button on your Kindle going, no, really.
Well, before I go, because I know you're well, that's the same thing about Isabel Wilkerson's book. I mean,
I got to read this
because of the fact I am, you know, I have a little bit of education, and I know why, you know, black people left the South before I read the book. But she goes into the brutality of the South. But one of the things, the reason why I don't know anything about my history, and I'm not talking about as a black person, I'm just talking about my family history. Is because it was what was happening in the South was so horrific and so brutal that no one that left there alive wanted to talk about it.
All you want to do is forget. All you want to do is forget.
All you want to do is forget. And I wish, you know, talk about knowing then what you know now situation. Had I had the idea of talk, because my great great grandmother, her mother was a slave, or her grandmother was a slave. So that much I know, and that I know that she was half Indian. Don't know what, you know, what nation, because I was corrected on that. I said tribe to somebody, and I'm like, no. You do not say tribe, you say nation. These are things that I'm learning. So it was just an amazing. You know, it's just an amazing book, and it's a long book. It's like 500-600 pages. But
well, same thing with 1493. You are not going to be done in a night.
No, that's one of those things. But
because there's too much information. You can't. Everything can't be put into a pamphlet.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have to, and I think it is more difficult for us in our era than perhaps for people in previous generations. It is difficult for us to maintain our focus for 500 or 600 pages.
Oh, dude, seriously, I am an ADD girl. I am. You know, and it takes me a lot longer to read than when I was younger, because when we were younger, because we're about the same age, we didn't have as much stimuli as we have now.
No.
We had three channels.
We had a fourth one that just showed a camera panning back and forth across a clock, a barometer, and a thermometer, and then back.
LA, we had ABC, of course, ABC, NBC, CBS, and we had Channel 11, which was KCTV, and we had Channel 9, Channel 13, and Channel 5. So we had, you know, we had local stations, this being LA, and, you know, but it was nothing like it is now. So you didn't have the distractions. You could read. You know, back when I was younger, I could probably read a 500-page book in 2 to 3 days. without even, you
and
know.
See, I did a lot of book reading when we would come up to this very house I live in to visit my grandmother, because everything was on an antenna, and hardly any TV signals came, could cross the mountains. And so there was a lot of time spent, this used to be the back porch where the studio is, a lot of time was spent back here on an old naugahyde-covered couch with one of the hundreds of books that were in shelves around this place, and me just reading and reading and reading and reading. And you're right, it took you places TV and movies cannot begin to take you. I'm so glad we heard from you tonight, Tracy. It's wonderful, and I hope you get to read the book. And by all means, don't be such a doggone stranger, you hear?
Yeah, like I said, I you know, because I know you got to go, but the only reason why you haven't heard from me is because I've been sick.
I'm sorry.
And
well, drop us a note when you're sick. I mean, you know, I was out there tweeting when that little Republican inside my belly was going crazy.
Well, we might be having, let's just say, I've been having neurosurgeon issues and, spine stuff, brain stuff. I was thinking I was okay. I had a battery of tests ran over the week, and I said, well, if I don't hear from my doctor by the end of the week, everything's fine. Yeah, he called today. They called today. I have to go in on Monday. So
you get to worry about that all weekend.
Well, no, I'm just going to drink all weekend. I'm not going to worry about shit, actually. See, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to party like it's 1999, or better yet, that this is the Mayan calendar, and today is March 11th, 2012. December 11th, 2012. So that's what I'm going to do. Because I'm okay. I'm not going to worry about it. And there's that. But I will drop it. If I can't talk or get through on Monday, I will email you, because our appointment is Monday at 9:30. So are you East Coast or Mountain Time?
East Coast.
Okay.
All right.
I will email you and let you know what's going on either way.
All right. Thanks, Tracy. Take care, dear.
To my love. Bye
now. Tracy calling from L.A. It is time to get out of here. Before we do, one little announcement. If you're anywhere near Albany, New York, a good thing to go to this weekend. In Albany, Power Shift, New York, 2012, at the Grand Street Community Arts Center, 68 Grand Street, Albany, New York. Tomorrow, an address by Dr. Sandra Steingraber. Go and hear her. She's been on this program. She is amazing. She is a powerful speaker and has a tremendous message. Dr. Sandra Steingraber speaking at Power Shift New York tomorrow in Albany. On Monday, they're going to march to the Capitol and demand an end to fracking in New York from Governor Cuomo. Thanks, everybody, for making all of this happen through your kind contributions and your contributions of your time and your ideas and just sometimes just the quiet of knowing that. I mean, I got notes, and I'll share them on Monday, from folks saying, you know, I seldom write in, but I just wanted you to know that we're still out here. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, our chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox for keeping everything going with the website and helping keeping me technically sane. And thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Go there as well as Stop the Ache, STOPTHEACHE, stoptheache.org, and learn about the ongoing work to end the ongoing tragedies that mountaintop removal brings to Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next. Broth time for me. Have a great weekend.